Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by Game Center, the must-have app for gamers. Game Center is filled with game information, the latest gaming news from ShackNews.com, and videos and screenshots for over 7,000 games. Game Center is free and available now for the iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
Hey everybody, welcome to Weekend Confirmed. My name is Garnet Lee, and we have an excellent show for you today, thanks to Brooklyn making me Black Magic coffee, which has radically changed my disposition in about 10 minutes.
Would you call her your Black Magic woman?
Yeah, absolutely. I will not sing it, though, if you were trying to lure me into it, but I bet you will sing it. You know what? By the way, that's Jeff Cannata.
Hey!
And our good friend of the show, Andrea Renee, is here from Mahalo with This Week in Video Games.
Hello.
Welcome back.
So, Andrea, you know, there's a fun game we can play.
Yes.
The fun game is called Who Can Get Jeff to Sing First?
What? That takes no effort.
Yeah, exactly. It really doesn't take
that
much
effort.
That
is the easiest game ever made.
But it is very fun if you'd like to play.
Okay.
All right.
Oh, so, boy.
The stage is set.
And the show has ground to a halt. See there, I just did it. Now
No. It's where we get you to sing a pop song.
A pop song?
Yes.
It has to be pop.
Yeah.
Oh.
Like current pop?
No.
It could be like old
pop.
Oh,
no. It could be, yeah, whatever, you know.
We're losing listeners by the second.
No, we're gaining them. They're like, come on, how long is this going to take? Right. They're actually throwing down money right now. Someone's going, all right, I got you right here. 5% for the house. 5% for the house. Over under is... What should the over-under be? I think the over-under is, well, I mean, halfway would be easy.
What song do you want me to sing? I'll just do it and get it over with and move on.
No, that's no fun. We do have a lot to get onto today. Let's see. All three of us really like Ska Studios because we've all played The Dishwasher Vampire Smiles, which is kind of interesting for an XBLA title. It's not that common that we would just all happen to have played it.
Right.
But we obviously like to... You know, slash the shit out of shit and then rip it up, tear off the heads.
The blood spatters are quite impressive.
There, what else have we played? You know what? We decided maybe we'll talk a little bit about Dead Space because I finally got around to playing that a couple of 3 weeks ago. And
he's not talking about Dead Space 2, people.
Yeah, no, they know that I am not talking about Dead Space 2. They know this. And I don't know if I'm even going to be able to finish it. So, and not because I'm a wimp. Because
did you get to the meteor part yet?
The meteor, like where you're going through the...
Where you're sitting in the... Millennium Falcon-esque shooting thing.
I haven't gotten to that piece yet, but I got to the bridge. And anyway, we shall discuss that. And then we have awesome music today. Jim Guthrie, who composed the music for Super Brothers Swords and Sorcery, which I hear people like.
Now that you have an iPad, you must play.
I have an iPad right here. It's an iPad 2. That's right. We got the number 2 right here.
It's very,
yes, I am
it's
that
very worthwhile. It's a wonderful game.
We have to figure out what the best way to get people interacting with us during the show is.
You can ask them.
You can have them tweet.
Yeah, like so the tweeting thing is cool, but then I thought, like, you know, do people do chat rooms anymore, or is that like 290s?
No, chat rooms, a lot of shows have chat rooms, live chat rooms.
We should figure out a live chat room.
Well, if we live streamed the show, they're just sitting in a chat room not hearing what we're saying.
Yeah, that's the best part of it.
That's ridiculous.
But they're not going to pay attention. No one really pays attention to the show anyway. They just listen to the part that they hear where they want to comment, and then they hop on a forum and start like ragging on us for being, you know, idiots.
No, that's not true.
I think in order to have a chat room, you have to have a live feed of the show, Garnet.
It would be kind of cool if you had a camera in here. You know, so then people could see.
Yeah, well, we haven't really figured that out, have we?
No, but I'm glad you brought it up.
I'm glad we talked ourselves into that corner. But people are like, yeah, I think we suggested that like a year ago. Whatever.
But then you would have to start wearing pants.
Well,
says you. I can position the camera.
Appropriately.
Exactly.
Camera adds 10 pounds, thank God.
Oh, that's not where I would position the camera.
I have completely lost my train of thought also. Oh, so anyway, so we have the music.
Oh, yeah, music from Sword and
Sports. And a question or a topic for the warning that is a really good topic. Plus, I have a topic from a first-time listener who was in the Shack News thread that asked a question that was sort of made me think about something. I was like, wow, that's a really interesting question. I hope it gets as good a discussion as I think it might. And if it doesn't, then you can blame me because I picked it.
And we're in this sort of lull before Portal right now, where we have time to play. I have time to play all these cool DLC games, or not DLC, but downloadable games.
Excuse me, I think you mean the lull before Mortal Kombat.
Maybe I do, but I mostly mean Portal.
I don't know. That depends on whether or not you signed the NDA. And that's it. Then we got news. And I don't know. We have hackers in the news because Andrea likes hackers.
Yep.
She's like, I didn't say that.
That's what you said. You said, I wanted to... I'm glad we're going to talk about that. I wanted to talk about the hackers.
I do want to talk about it. It doesn't mean I like them, though. Just for clarification.
Maybe you do. I don't know.
She wants to spit some hate at them.
Yes.
Really? Seriously? Like, what's up with that? She wants to rip them limb from limb like the dishwasher.
Good segue.
I know. Who have you played the original Dishwasher Samurai?
I did.
I did not play Dead Samurai.
That's interesting. But so what sparked you to pick up this one then?
Well, I saw a couple of the people I know on Twitter mentioning it, saying how cool it is. And then there was a feature of it on GameSpot. And then one of my other friends was like, hey, have you checked this out yet? And I was like, wow, I better get on this and check out this game.
Don't you mean to say you saw the Totally Rad Show on Tuesday where we talked about it? And that made you go, oh my God, I got to play this.
Absolutely. Right? That's what I said. That's totally what I said.
If you watch the daily episodes of Totally Rad Show available at totallyradshow.com, you'd know these things.
That's right. Anywho, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Oh, was I saying something?
I don't know. We weren't listening.
The first Dishwasher, of course, was the game that won the XNA contest.
So James did an awesome job with that game. Yep. And I think the thing of it that really carried over well to this, and I didn't identify with it until I started playing this one again. And I don't know if it may have already been said, but you know what this is? This is like, for me, follow with me a little bit. It's like the 2D version, philosophically or like play-wise, of a Ninja Gaiden to me. Because
Ninja Gaiden is a 2D, started as a 2D game.
Of modern Ninja Gaiden. Okay, obviously. But you know what I mean? Of the modern era Ninja Gaiden. Because Ninja Gaiden went 3D and got all pretty. But philosophically, my point is that it looks at first like it's just a game where you're being assaulted by tons of dudes and you've got like a blade and you're just like jamming on the buttons and trying to like slice them up. But very quickly, it gets difficult enough that if you're not learning how to play the game just kicks your ass.
Right.
So you really have to start learning how to use the different combos. And this game adds a lot of layers to it, I thought.
Yeah, the big feature, I think, that sets it apart from a lot of other kind of hack and slashers is that the freedom you get with the right stick to do all the dashing, and you can really dash any direction. Yeah, you can dash in any direction as much as you want. So it really opens up all dimensions of the 2D.
Hey, I'm dumb. You know, God, these headphones are falling off.
Did your head get smaller?
We are 12. It's so horrible.
Anyway,
I agree though about the combos.
Oh, look, they're getting tighter now.
Stop. don't.
They're definitely essential for success in the game. You can do the first level without really knowing what you're doing, but then you have to really use your loadouts and customize your loadouts and then change your weapons often and use your magical abilities.
I felt really dumb early in this game because, you know, right after you learn the blood dash thing, you come across, you know, you backtrack through the level a little bit. And then I was stuck.
Right.
And my mind hadn't, for some reason, thought, well, you know, other than dash left and right, maybe you could dash up.
Right.
And I literally restarted the game, irritated, and got to the same spot and had the same thing happen. I was like...
I did the exact same thing.
Yes!
I thought it kind of taught you that pretty well, and the fact that you fall down and then you have to get up.
No, seriously, I did. I.
But how are you supposed to know you can dash up? It's like you dash left, you dash right. You never think about dashing up.
I don't think you assume that you can walk straight up a wall.
That's true.
Well, I mean, walk up a wall, I figured you could do that.
Oh, okay. I didn't. I had to learn that after like me running around a little bit going, what the fuck is going on?
Did you guys like the art style?
Oh, I love it.
Yeah,
really?
It was really cool.
I don't know. I found it to be a little as graphic and as over the top as the violence is. I often wasn't really sure what I was doing to the poor person who was gushing blood.
It's hard to see sometimes, especially when you're doing like the finishing moves.
Yeah.
It's like really just like a big flash. And
I know his head isn't
on
anymore.
Cool is happening.
But yeah.
Yeah. I guess that would be like the one complaint. But I kind of like the gritty look that it has.
Mm-hmm.
It seems more like an indie title, which it is. And I think that, you know, there's a lot to be said for simplicity versus going really over the top.
Right.
I really like the line work in it. And I love the like dirty, you know, sort of, it's like Sin City, but a little dirtier. And then, you know, you have the little splashes of color that pop pieces out. For instance, you have the commandos with their bright green eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you get the blue flashes from the electricity. And that just really sets the whole thing off for me. But as far as the animation goes, I don't know that I could spend the time to stop and watch the animation during those attacks, because what I do find impressive is that whether or not the animation is there or not, it's amazing how fast it keeps up with all the different enemies that you're fighting at once. Like, you can do these insanely awesome air combos, especially when you get multiple guys, where you're like in the air, you grab one guy, you turn around and attack another guy, but before the guy behind you falls from the grab, you grab him again and toss him up, and then you turn back around,
yeah,
and you're like juggle, and you run combos up into the hundreds, which is really freaking fun and cool, because it's all very fluid and very fast, and it doesn't have a sort of pause, reset, next guy. I'm trying to think, what was the game? Was it Shinobi that had that sort of similar air juggle, but each time you air juggled, you went, you know, you sort of paused with each guy and were engaged, and then you had to see where the next one was and go towards them.
I don't think it was Shinobi, but I could be misremembering.
There's no ostensible like pause and I'm gonna go attack that guy. It's just super fluid.
Just keeps going.
It's super fluid air combat.
I don't think I'm as high on it as you guys are. I had fun with it. I don't know, the look and feel, it feels grimy and muddy and kind of unclear, like low res almost. It feels very,
I think that's part of the appeal. Isn't it?
I understand that that's intentional.
Yeah, it
kind of
goes with the whole storyline. You have these like cyborgs and
I totally don't understand the storyline.
In and out of the dream sequence, which I didn't really get. Like one moment you're like, well, what's reality? Are you in the dream or are you in reality? That part I was kind of confused about too.
You're either in horrible shape in a hospital or you're in space on the moon after having blown up the planet.
Well, speaking of moon.
Yes.
The downloadable game that I prefer much to Vampire Smile, Moondiver.
Yeah, so are you playing multiplayer? Because it's all about the co-op in that game.
I know, I'm so excited to do that. I've only been playing solo so far.
So you've been playing half the game.
I've been playing half the game. I really am excited about playing co-op. One of my favorite games as a kid, the game that would get me to get on my bike and go down to the 7-Eleven and spend my quarters, was Strider.
Okay.
Strider was crack to me for a while. And Koichi Yotsui is the...
Oh, I like how you like looked that up. You're
I did.
So
I wanted to say it correctly. But he's the designer of Moondiver. And I didn't know that going in. I just downloaded it on PS3, played it for a little while. I'm like, God, this really feels like Strider. This is amazing. Same designer. And I don't think he's really done anything since Strider or much. But
well, go ahead, check it out. You got it on your phone,
well,
right
there.
That's
what we do now, Mr. iPad.
Mr.
That's what we
iPad.
Do now. We check our facts so that when we're wrong,
this might take a lot of
even
this
more
might take
angry.
A lot of the fun out of the show for people.
It's true, but let me just talk a little bit about Moondiver, because it is awesome. It's the same kind of thing as Strider, the same kind of weapon slash visual, angular. You're always sort of on inclines, you know, and you can grab onto the underside of platforms, 2D hack and slash game. But it adds a role-playing element where you can level up certain attacks and do super combos where it keeps track of how many hits in a row you do, and then that gives you experience points, and you can spend those experience points to upgrade certain special attacks. It's great. It scratches that Strider itch that I didn't know was still itching me from way back when I was, you know, 11 years old. It's
you can do all of those things in Vampire Smile.
This very different, but this game, I love the aesthetic. It's a high definition Strider, and I love the wackiness of where the enemies come from and how many are coming on the screen at one time. Yes, it's similar to Vampire Smile. I just think I like the aesthetic. I like the role playing mechanic, the, you know, ranged attacks.
What platform are you playing on?
I think it's PS3 exclusive.
Okay, because I have it on PSN. I didn't know if it's on.
Yeah.
Are you sure?
I'm not, but I think.
Now we can use the power of the interwebs. Yeah. Andrea's already looked it up. What's it say?
I haven't looked it up yet.
Oh, God, you're so slow. How are you ever going to do news for us if you can't keep up any faster?
She's only got an iPad 1, Garnet.
Good my God.
It's only an iPad 1.
It is, okay? Give me a break.
Mine's 11 times faster. 11 times faster, I heard.
Anyway, I highly recommend it. I don't know. I made it up. It's fantastic. And it does have co-op, four-player co-op. And that I haven't had a chance to try it yet, but I can only imagine it's even better. Super fun. Great special attacks that you can attack dudes all the way across the screen. It's got that same, like, you enter an area, it closes it off. You have to kill everybody in there before you can go to the next area. You've got that cool, like, magnetic hand thing.
Are we getting close to where there's going to be a glut of downloadable content titles?
Oh, that's already happened. That happened years ago.
Yeah, I meant, are we getting to another one of those clumps in time? You're right. I think that happens all the time. But I feel like we're in another one of those little clumps of that. Because, look, Russian Attack just came out, which I really kind of wanted to check out. Yeah. And
Hardcore Uprising?
That's the other one. That was the one I really wanted to try out.
That one's, like, retardedly hard.
Well, Contra was, you know, it's...
You know, what's interesting? I actually got to interview the producer over at Konami's headquarters for both of those games, the mm-hmm. two separate producers. And the producer for Hardcore Uprising, like, when we asked him, we're like, so people are going to say this is Contra reskin, and he was adamant. He's like, this is not Contra.
It is exactly Contra.
I know, right?
I mean, it couldn't be more Contra.
He almost got, like, offended
that I asked
him that.
It's not bad.
And I couldn't believe that. I was like, well, okay, fine. So what's different about it? And he like launches into this whole thing. If you read the scrolling text about the backstory about the whole like plot of the game, it's mind-boggling. Like it'll scramble your brain, like how complicated the backstory is when it's really just like a side-scrolling shooter.
Yeah.
So
that's why it's not like Contra, because it has a different story.
Yes. Precisely.
It's not dudes in a jungle at all. It's guys in a desert.
But what's like, awesome about okay. that game, every time I demoed it twice, and what I loved about it was it had that, like, lots of different fucking cool weapons to pick up, and when you have the two guys playing together,
yeah.
it's like you're, like, one of them's supporting at range, and one of them's up in front battling it out.
Like, just like Contra, dude.
Just like Contra. Yeah. Oh, no, I'm not.
And it's got the spread, dude, totally the spread weapon, and even the way the power-ups come onto the screen, it's exactly that game. But, like I said, that's a good thing, because it's high definition, the sprites are gorgeous and crisp, and it looks really great as a modern version of Contra, and I think we've seen that a few times, like the new Ghostbusters Sanctum of Slime game,
which you hated
while terrible, is basically a modern version of Smash TV, and you're getting these, like, you know, retro titles that are revamping, and we're seeing that a lot in the iOS space too, the mobile space, is where you get these guys who are doing, like, somebody recommended Crosswords Unlimited or something like that, which is basically Picross. You know, it's these games that are basically just aping really popular games and giving them to you for way cheaper. So there's a lot of that happening.
So it's weird, because I think that the original appeal to all these games was that they're not as big of an investment, so you can play them and get through them. But when there's so many of them, you're still stuck in the same damn spot.
Of what? Spending a lot of money?
Well, of not being able to play all the games you want to.
Well,
I mean,
yes, but not you. But the
Russian Attack,
I
could probably leave to the side. Hardcore, I really wanted to play, and now it's like what, 2.5-3 weeks since it came out, and I haven't touched it.
Yeah,
and Moondiver,
Moondiver
haven't gotten to that.
Is definitely worth your time. I really like it a lot.
I will willfully admit that part of the reason I immediately went to Dishwasher was because I loved the first game, and this time going in, even I knew. It's okay to, like, get it now and start playing it, because it's going to start beating me up, and that's fine, because now I'm not, like, stressed on, like, oh, I'm just going to go run through it, because I know I'm not going to run through it, because I know it's going to kick my ass.
I downloaded...
And the arcade levels are really cool. The arcade levels with the score attack, have you done
that?
Oh,
yeah. No, I haven't. Mm-hmm.
So you should definitely do that.
Yeah, it's fun.
That part is actually really cool. Foobs is on those scoreboards.
He's freaking always the top of my friends
dude,
list everywhere. Always.
What the hell? Is he, like, a savant?
Him. Yes, he is.
Like... Really,
he's
really.
Always...
Jose, props to you, dude. Jose from Electric Playground, obviously
he's amazing.
Knows how to rock
and his
that
freaking
sort of game.
Gamer score is like
it is ridiculous.
Too. And I literally spent when Geometry Wars 2 came out, I really literally spent a month deciding I'm just going to take him down.
Yeah, you didn't, did you?
I would beat him, and I would go, ha ha, and then like the next day he would have beat my score by like doubling it, you know?
It's amazing. I mean, that's the same. That's the same appeal that like the autolog has in Shift, yeah. or also in the other Need for Speed games. It's like it constantly is on you like that. Except it sort of starts to piss me off. It's like I'm playing my game. I won a race, but you didn't win it. You know, you won the single player race, but you know what? You didn't win it good enough because two of your friends have beaten your time already. So exactly. You should go back and play. Wait, I already finished that race. I don't want to go run that race again. I don't even like that race.
It's a good motivator.
God damn it, that race pissed me off.
It's only a motivator for people who are, you know, achievement hounds. Yeah. Like, I mean, I like.
Oh, I disagree. I'm not an achievement hound. It is, if you're competitive, like Jeff said, it, oh my God, it'll piss me off so bad. It will get under my skin so bad.
I consider myself to be highly competitive, and I am the world's like sorest loser. But I don't sweat it if my friends have a higher score than me in a game, because there are so many games that I want to be playing that I can't spend enough time trying to always be one-upping my friends on a single game. I'm like, on to the next game, on to the next game.
Yeah, it sucks to be you.
Well,
on
whatever.
To the next one, on to the next one. How long was that until I sing a pop song? Jay-Z's pop, right?
Yeah. Yeah, he's definitely gone pop.
Damn it, does that mean she won?
Yes.
I don't.
You did that on a purpose.
I did.
You totally did that on a purpose. You have failed the internet, Jeff Cannata. You have failed the internet. By the way, we did look it up, and XBLA release of Moondiver, April. Oh. So I guess
that's this month.
Yeah. So PSN had a window, at least according to Wikipedia, which was the quickest thing that, you know, it always comes up at the top of the list. And there was another thought I had in there, and I can't remember what it was now.
There's a lot of great downloadable games right now. And you know, Microsoft is great about doing this like summer of arcade. And I think PlayStation is doing the spring of fun, whatever they brand it. But it's a great time, especially when there's these lulls and big
That's
releases.
What it was, is the competition question. So all these games that I get into. So I'm just now into the second world of Pixel Junk Shooter 2. Which is awesome. I would totally recommend it. It's great. Like, you know, the first world of Shooter 2 is called Belly of the Beast or whatever. So it has like all of the inside like the intestines and stuff, which is cool. But then the second level, and I didn't know what to expect because I purposefully stayed a little bit away from it. It starts to take you into like this underground mine laboratory environment that's filled with a lot of like plasma cannons and stuff, and it adds like a bullet hell mechanic, which is just crazy because now you're like navigating
for that game.
Now you're navigating through all of the, you know, the cavernous spaces, and you're trying to dodge and dive through all of the firing patterns from these weird, like, you know talking about bullet hell shooter, sure. Like where it's got like some of them like put out pinwheels of shots and do different patterns, and you're trying to figure out how to get through the patterns while there's still things attacking you. And then the new thing that they've added in this, you know, they add new dynamics in each one. This one has like a magnetic liquid, and it's kind of crazy. The liquid is attracted to your ship, and so you can kind of fly up to it and bend the streams out of the way and then like try and whip around it, because of course it doesn't move. Like, it doesn't just like spring back. It moves like it has a fluid dynamic to it. Really cool. So many creative ideas in that game.
I really am a fan of Shooter 2.
I really love that stuff. Of course, that's why, I mean, no big surprise that I love all the Pixel Junk stuff. I should play Racer sometime. I never played Racer. That's the one game. It was really funny. Do you listen to, you know, I listened to their podcast, and I thought it was a really cool thing that Dylan said is that he bases the games that they do under the Pixel Junk brand. Because even mine, Q does also a lot of stuff for DSiWare. And other games in development. And he does the Pixel Junk games are all games based off of ideas he had like a decade ago when he was working on, the word that came to mind is primitive, but not really primitive. But, you know, just older systems, like 16-bit systems that really didn't come to fruition the way he wanted to. And now he can do them in a more and do like a redo, a modern take on them.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was recently talking to a developer who will remain nameless that was telling me that, you know, it's funny when people come up to him and say, I got a great game idea, man. I'd love to tell you my game idea, but you have to sign this NDA or whatever. And he's like, we don't need game ideas. So everybody that works for these companies has tons of game ideas. It's all about being able to make them and make them well. It's all about execution and budget and fitting those into a time frame. He's like, all of us have like 1,000 pet projects that we'd love to do. So we don't need your game idea. You know, it's not we're not at a loss for ideas.
Look, we don't need your idea, okay?
We need more hours in the day, and we need more money. That's what we need. So that's interesting.
But then again, if this space starts keeps getting crowded, I wonder what's going to happen. I wonder how long we can sustain this. I mean, like, look, what's going to happen again is you're going to look at all these titles that came out here in the last 6 weeks for downloadable, and how many of them are actually going to hit the targets they want to do. Like, there's a Red Faction game that just came out. Did you see that?
Red Faction Battlegrounds.
Yeah, have you played it?
No, because I've been playing Dishwasher.
Did you even know anything about it?
I've heard a couple stories about it, but I didn't see any like bells and whistles that was like, you must play this game.
I didn't even know anything about it. I was like, oh, okay, I got a PR release. Red Faction's Battlegrounds.
What is it?
It's like a vehicular combat 3D simulator in the Red...
Download game?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Huh.
What do you know, huh?
I didn't know about it.
Out of nowhere.
I'm ready for Armageddon.
I'm definitely ready for Armageddon.
I loved the whatchamacallit, Gorilla.
The whatchamacallit?
Yeah. And what I saw at E3 made me very excited.
How much of Gorilla did you play?
Almost all of it. I played a lot of that game.
Did you play in the multiplayer?
Yeah,
the multiplayer
a little
was fun.
Bit.
I had a good time with the multiplayer.
That's not why I loved the game. The multiplayer was a little frustrating. It just became a power-up grab.
Yeah.
Which is
But they had cool power-ups. And the
they
pack,
had great
the packs
ups.
Were really fun. I had a really fun time
but
with
the
packs.
Open, that is one of the best open-world games in the last few years. I had such a great time in that open world because the way they handled getting you missions, alerting you to things that were just happening that you could pick up on your radio and go and do.
See, and that's why...
And then the destructibility of the environments is so much fun in that game.
And you're not worried about the new one being underground and not having...
I am worried about
yeah.
that very much. I'm worried about it being a linear third-person shooter. But I will say that what I saw at E3 with all of the weapons, the new weapon types, makes me very excited because it's...
They're showing it in a couple weeks, so we should know yeah. more about it then. Jeff's actually going up to San Francisco to see it.
Wow.
So
I would love to.
I guess we'll know more. Because the first two games, their whole deal was geomodding.
Right, the actual FPS versions of yes. Red Faction. Yeah.
Geomodding being where you could like blow holes in cave walls and
in
change.
Very specific areas.
No, dude, it was totally freeform.
No.
Totally freeform.
People aren't seeing you roll your eyes.
No, they're probably not seeing me roll my eyes. All right, well, I'll let them roll their eyes for a moment while we take a break and we come back on the other side. We still have Dead Space, maybe some Shift 2, some BG&E HD, all that and more, and still Sword and Sorcery music to come later on. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. You know, between all those 3DS games and Crysis 2, Homefront, and Shift 2, there's a whole lot of games to get this week, and I don't know if you could buy all of them, so why not try out renting them from Gamefly? You will get your game shipped directly to your door. All you have to do is set it up online. You can go by Gamefly.com. And, of course, we've got a code for you, a good code, I think. Click on that joystick in the upper right-hand corner. Type in the code confirmed. Buy your first month, and we will back it up with a second month for free. Yes, it's a BOGO. Buy one, get one free. So give it a shot, you know? Try out some games. Get Shift 2, Crysis, or your 3DS stuff right to your door from Gamefly. All right, coming up later in the news. Hey, Weston Zampella have added new charges to the ongoing Activision suit.
Yay!
And actually, you'll be interested because these sound very reasonable, but maybe the most difficult for them to have stand up in court. So it's interesting ongoing an unfolding story. So what else have we got? We played, we had the Insomniac event a couple weeks ago, and I went and played All for One, mm-hmm. which I think is really interesting and fun. Really fun, but I think it's going to be really interesting to see how it goes because it's entirely also set up for co-op. I'm wondering how many of these co-op games are going to keep going because we all, you know, we've had this discussion before in like the warning of how much we like the idea of playing co-op games.
Yes.
But how often do people actually play entire games co-op?
I do all the time. I love it. If it has online co-op, generally speaking, I want to play it that way. I having said Moondiver, I haven't done it yet.
Mm-hmm.
But
I'm going to ask you about Reach.
Speaking, Reach, yes.
Oh, you did?
Gears, okay. Both Gears is yes.
Okay.
What other games have co-op that, you know, I love playing it that way.
I think co-op is fantastic, but I think that there's too many games now that don't allow for local co-op or local multiplayer, that you have to be online and playing with someone who's on a separate system in order to play co-op or multiplayer. And I think that that's
Well, you'll
sad.
Like All for One then.
Well, good. I actually, I was at the event too, and Garnett and I saw each other there, and I didn't actually play All for One. I was playing Resistance 3.
Yeah, I played that game tape too. Wow. I played both of them.
Tell me how you really feel.
I played both of them because I got the skills.
Did you play both at the same time? Like
yeah.
Like that dude who played all four Marios at the same time?
That was awesome. It's amazing. I had the controller in my feet. I have monkey toes. It's amazing.
Did you see that video about with the Mario guy?
No.
Some dude just recently beat all four Marios using the same controller input.
How do you do that?
And they were all speed runs. He did it in like 20 minutes, and he beat the first four Marios using the same controller input.
No,
crazy pants.
I'm not exactly understanding. So he had one controller, and it was...
Yeah, there was some like tweak as far as inputting it. Like, I don't know how... He used some tricks. They said like there's some slowing at some points, but basically... The guy is controlled using the same controller in all four games. So in order to jump over the fireball in game three, the first guy is also jumping.
So is he basically proving that they're all built in the same pattern?
No, he's just that good. You should watch the video. It's Crazy Town.
It's Crazy Town.
Yeah.
Anyway, come on down to Crazy Town.
I totally derailed.
Sort of derail. I don't even remember what we were talking about.
We were talking about Resistance 3 and Ratchet
and
Clank. And before that, we were talking about co-op.
I liked Resistance 3. I totally loved Resistance 3, which we talked about last week. Did you like Resistance? Did you play multiplayer or single player?
Multiplayer.
Oh, see, I didn't play the multiplayer yet. Jeff has played the multiplayer. He liked it.
Not this Jeff.
Jeff Mattis.
Yeah.
I think that
she didn't like it. I can tell already. Well, she's doing the deal where you're searching with your eyes to say something nice because someone else just said something nice and you don't want to be a dick and be like, oh, I'm going to say something really awful now.
I didn't think there was anything that special about it. I'm just kind of tired of these alien invasion and post-apocalyptic stories.
Maybe they're not aliens. We don't know. They're Chimerans.
What kind of stories?
Chimeran.
Clearly
kind of
they're not human, so that means they're alien.
They could be the next generation of human.
No. No way. There's no way we evolved that fast.
It's possible.
I mean, how
many
eyes do those things have?
Have you ever evolved?
Wish
maybe.
I had more eyes.
Maybe I have. You don't know.
I could play four Marios.
Anyway, I think that... I actually read this knock a lot. They're like, oh, well, they just turned Resistance multiplayer into Call of Duty because it has power-ups. Which I think is sort of a cynical, backhanded slap because... Isn't that kind of what people have told developers that they want out of those sort of games? Is it, you know, haven't we sort of spoken with what we play that we want to be rewarded with new guns and level systems and that's like it's almost crazy to me because I'm thinking, well, so someone there are other games that added, you know, player investment systems, whether they're, you know, were based around experience levels or classes or whatever. It's not strictly just Call of Duty, and just because we like them doesn't mean that you're just aping Call of Duty. I think that's such a cheap way out of dissing the game.
But that's not. I don't think that's a valid knock on a first person shooter multiplayer, because I think it's kind of like you almost expect that to be in there in the multiplayer for a first person shooter. If there's no leveling system, no way to unlock new weapons, then what's the point?
So thinking about what I like out of that game is the weapon system. Like, no one has weapons like that. I mean, obviously, the same design studio that does Ratchet and Clank, which has some of the most amazing weapons ever.
Definitely.
Brought at least some of that, like, we don't have to think inside the idea of this is a gun with a grenade launcher underneath it, thought process to their guns, you know? So I really like that. I've always found that to be the most interesting part of Resistance. That's why I thought when they went linear, it wasn't as good. And only two weapons, because you need to have all the different weapons to play with. You need to have the bullseye and the auger.
You need to have that creative fun of going,
exactly.
I'm going to tackle this by shooting through things or around things.
And it only gets better when you're playing against people.
But, Andrea, let me ask you, is it just that it's a alien invasion thing that it makes you... I mean, what kind of stories would you prefer? Or is it just that it handles that in a very rote way?
I just don't think that there's anything about the story that's grabbing me. I mean, when we saw the in-depth demo of the single-player campaign, when they showed us a couple levels, it definitely made me more excited about trying the game. But it's not like I'm waiting on the edge of my seat for this game to come out.
Well, I'm totally different from her.
Yes.
And that's funny because, you know, like I took a lot of slack because I did not like 2 very much. I really liked the first one.
I didn't like 2 at all.
I didn't like, well, at all, really.
Well, that's a little harsh, but 2 was a massive disappointment. Maybe the biggest disappointment of that year for me.
See, I think that the thing with 2 was the expectations were really high.
Yeah, I liked the first one a lot.
But I find this one really interesting in that the whole idea is military conflict gone, down to just a Capelli, very much a survival, and like the whole idea of it being based off of the road alone is really bizarre.
I don't know what that means when they say based on the road.
Well, I tell you what it brings to mind for me. It brings to mind bleak, desperate,
right,
screwed up, not having any chance. Like, I almost wonder how
it may be them just saying, yeah, it's a go from one place to another place in a post-apocalyptic setting. But I don't think tonally it's going to be like the road.
Well, they say that, I mean, part of the whole storyline is that the Khmer have, like, completely taken over, and that these pockets of survivors really are against all odds.
Yeah, but there's a million games like that. I mean, that's not novel.
You were trying to get him to sing again, weren't you?
Maybe.
I knew it. I heard the way you did that. Against all odds.
No, but that's exactly my point about this game, is that it's not doing something unique and different and new.
But is that necessary?
Absolutely not necessary, but because it's not doing anything that exciting, I'm not like jumping up and down for it. But then again, I'm not like, first person shooters aren't my favorite genre of game anyway.
So if the story wasn't spectacular or novel or interesting, do you think the game could still be compelling based on a purely mechanical fun factor? Because I don't particularly find the I know I get a lot of flack for this, but I don't particularly find the storyline of Halo all that interesting. I think it's convoluted and kind of silly.
It's not about the storyline. It's about the characters.
It's not even the characters for me. It's the fact that the action in that game is so well done, and that it's such a high level experience tactically and from a moment to moment fun factor that game carries through. And really the same thing
now that you say that, I can almost draw, not almost, I can draw a mind's mental connection to me between Resistance and Halo, because one thing about Halo is it has great diversity of weapons from the Needler to the plasma, what's the name of the gun that's like the charge
pistol.
Gun? The plasma pistol. Yes, thank you. Mm-hmm. To the Marines pistol, which is great for headshots, but not, then you got the battle rifle, you got the marksman.
But I don't think weapons is what makes that game fun. I think the weapons
I
are part
disagree.
Of it.
Yeah, the weapons are pretty bomb in that game.
They're at higher level, but they become so important. Like getting through on a heroic, you have to know which weapon to use against which enemy, shields or not shields. That's part of what makes that game so fun.
Yeah, okay.
Because it comes
mechanics. We're just kind of disagreeing semantically. I think it's the whole package, whereas I feel Resistance maybe relies on the novelty of the weapon. I'm using the word novel too much, but it relies on that, the weapons being so different than most games, a little more, I think, than Halo does. Not that we need to draw a direct comparison between
those
two games.
Well, they have to, because, Halo was one of the, first modern first-person shooters that had this alien invasion thing happen. Like, I made this comparison on a show I was on, like, months ago, saying all these alien first-person shooters are just trying to recreate what Halo started. And a lot of people gave me a lot of flack for that.
Half-Life, alien invasion. But alien invasion, alien invasions are, it's a standard trope of genre storytelling, so I don't think... I don't know. I guess I'm not clear on your objection to that. You just think they don't do it in an interesting way.
I don't have
way.
An objection to that. I just don't find that intriguing. It's not a draw for me, the fact that they have all these different cool weapons.
She's looking forward to the Civil War shooter.
Yeah.
It's going to be awesome. Flintlock.
Call of Juarez? First one was in the Civil War, wasn't it?
So anyway, All for One, looping back to where we started originally with Insomniac, is an interesting mishmash of the sort of third-person action-adventuring of a Ratchet & Clank done as a four-player cooperative brawling, running beat-em-up. Hmm. And it's really cool because what's really cool about it, the mechanic that I liked, is they added this, what would you call it, like a tether shot.
Right.
That you can... at any time, fire and connect to one of your buddies and use that as sort of like a bungee.
Kind of like Crackdown 2?
Does Crackdown 2 have that?
Yeah.
Okay. I was actually, it reminded me like of the ninja rope in Worms.
Mm.
Because the way they employ this mechanic a lot of times is that, so you also have this suction gun where you can like suck up one of your friend co-players and then launch them out of that like a launched shot. And then they have a mechanic where they have gaps where to get across it, you have to like suck your buddy into the gun, fire him over the gap, and then while he's in midair, slingshot your tether rope to him, swing across the gap, land on the other side, and then he tether ropes to you and pulls himself across.
Wow.
And it's really cool. And the thing that Insomniac is good about is that they make it where there's enough assists on it that you can do it as long as you're reasonably, you know, dexterous. You know, it's like not, it's not like super, super hard to do, and it makes you feel badass, and it's fun.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. It's like the jet boots in the last game where
it
assists you to a large extent just to make it fun.
That's cool. I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah, neither do I.
And they're very good at doing other cooperatively involved mechanics inside there, you know, like puzzles where to get across a bridge, you need two people cranking on a lever while the other two people defend them or something, you know, or all four of you have to hit a button in order to get something to move. And it's like simplistic stuff, but when you're in a fun environment that has really cool... The other thing I think that they're good at, and I think we've all gotten better, you know, a lot of games have gotten better at this, but one thing they're really good at is having 3D world environments that really take advantage of every element of working in three dimensions. So
all three elements? Sorry.
Yes. X, Y, and Z. But I mean, they're really good at winding around in lots of ways. So you'll be going up and down into the left. Like they don't ever get really sucked too much into a, like, you know, like I'm just moving forward sort of sense. They're really good at building diverse environments that pull you around, and you're like, and places that you see, you go, oh, there's over there to the, you know, way over there to my left and on the ground is some area that I wonder if I could get to, and eventually you get there. They're very good at like building that sort of you know, they build that deal where you see something and you start to think about it and then you can get there, and they're like good at giving you that, that helps expand the sense of space in your mind. I don't know how big the space actually is, but it's really good at fooling you into thinking, oh, this world's really big because I saw that in the, you know, in the distance before, and now I'm there, and I have like...
I love that feeling.
God of War is really good at that, too. Yeah. That's one of the things that always makes the God of War levels really fucking cool, is like you'll see something, and then you'll get there, and you're like, holy shit, I remember when I was like way back over there, and I saw this down here. This environment's huge, and it's really not.
It's a small thing, but it really adds a feeling of, you know, to use that catchphrase, immersion. You really feel like you're in a physical space when you can. Like, there's a great moment in God of War 3 where you're walking and you can look through a hole in the back of the environment, and then you eventually get to where you saw.
That's cool.
Yeah, I love that stuff. It's a small thing, but I think it adds a lot to the experience.
All of those tricks help build a character of space really well, because that's all it's about, right? It's all about building the illusion and fooling the person who's playing the game into feeling like they're really captured in the space.
Right.
It's funny that we're talking about all these mechanics, because, you know, like one of the big comments in the threads lately has been like, well, these guys, all they do is talk about narrative anymore. They just don't ever talk. We need Brian back, because they don't ever talk about the mechanics. And we used to talk about, you know, gun mechanics. Now we're talking about level design mechanics. I don't know. That's funny. Yeah. Immersion, of course, was one of the big things that people were really high on with Dead Space, because, of course, there's no HUD, and that's, well, there's minimalist.
There's a contextual HUD.
There's a contextual HUD that you can pull up inside the space, but you've got, like, you know, the health bar on the back of his suit, and you have the stasis meter that's like a little disc on the back of his suit. And I think that part of Dead Space is really cool. Mm-hmm. But I'm really wondering where all the hype for Dead Space came from. And then we were talking about it in the pre-show, and you guys are both anti-Dead Space, too. So, Mark McDonald, you're about to rail at me, I think.
A lot of people, I think. It's a very popular game.
I've played, so I will willfully admit that, especially Mark, who like I hold probably the highest regard of all video game folks that I know. I mean, Mark, like I Mark's one of the smartest guys I ever hung out with, besides being a friend. He just like, he gets games really well. And the extent to which he was high on Dead Space always made me think, wow, I really got to play this game. I really got to play this game. It's Doom 3 in third person.
I don't know about that.
Yeah.
It's monster closets. It's recorded pieces of logs around for you to read and get the story from. It's demonic overtones. It's grotesques that come at you from every different direction. And it's shocks and startles, but not scares.
Yeah, but I don't. I think that's where the comparison to Doom begins and ends. I think it's a very different game. Yeah, all those points are correct, but
what else is there to the game?
But a lot of survival horror games have all of those things.
There's inventory management. There's exploration. Doom had none of that.
Doom had exploration.
No.
Doom 3 certainly had exploration.
Not really.
You're on the surface of Mars, going through the environment, then you go down into the caves, and you go down to the dig site, and there's even artifacts. It's the same damn game.
No, I'm not going to agree with you, but I mean,
you're not telling me why not.
That's not the problem that I had.
They even do like the same sorts of things, like where you go, like you're inside the laboratory or inside the space building, which is not the spaceship, but it's the same thing. And you're locked inside one room, but you can see through the window where your buddies are getting attacked. Oh my God, I can't get to them.
1,000 games do that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not a Doom trope. It's not. And there's so many other kinds of things you do in Dead Space. You know,
I thought you didn't like it.
I'm not saying I love it. I'm saying that it's different than Doom. The reason I didn't love the game is I felt like everything it is right at the beginning. And it's a game that I loved for the first 3 hours I played it.
Okay.
And then after that, it's like, well, oh, it's just more of this. It's this continuing.
Well, what game isn't that?
Well, I think a lot of games add and become different by the end than they were at the beginning, and you know, up the stakes and change things, and you could argue that there are moments that do that in Dead Space, but I felt like it really makes a great first impression, but doesn't sustain and doesn't build on that. You're just going around the same area, finding the same kinds of things, and
it's because you're Mr. Fix-It.
That's exactly how I felt about Infinity Blade.
Well. Wow, that's
same,
a much different kind of game, but yes.
Same thing.
Wow, that was like, I had to process for a minute there.
I just had to blurt that out, sorry.
Really?
No, but I mean, we can go into that if you'd really like to, but it's the same thing. It's you have, first impression is really cool, and it's really awesome, and then it's more of the same, more of the same, more of the same.
Oh, that I got you now.
But that's fine for a game that, well, how much was that, $10-$15?
Infinity Blade, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Compared to a $60 Dead Space.
Yes.
You know? I think a lot of these indie games and a lot of these downloadable games do a great job of taking a core concept and then iterating on that as you progress through the game and finding ways to take what was introduced in the beginning and turn it on its head by the end. And I think, I mean, even a game like Bulletstorm, while, yes, is basically the same game all the way through, you're constantly introduced to new ways to mess with the mechanic. And I felt like the only thing that Dead Space continues to do is put you through very similar environments and then make things more difficult by making ammo scarce and throwing...
I didn't have an ammo problem.
Really?
No.
Oh, that was one of the things that annoyed me about that game. But I mean, that's kind of a gimmick of that genre, you know, the survival horror.
But there's
genre.
So many different weapons to use. So I see, here's where I'm curious, because I think that, you know, I had to rail a little bit about Dead Space just to get people going. I mean, I get, one of the things that someone pointed out to me is that playing it 2 years on and having had such expectations has undoubtedly had an effect on how my reception of the game would be, right? And that's hard to argue. I don't really have an argument with that. And I, as everyone who listens to the show knows, I'm not enamored with scary games or scary stuff. Although I love Resident Evil. Resident Evil is
not scary.
Scary.
Well, actually,
it's fun.
Resident Evil 2 is pretty darn scary.
Oh, come on.
There were moments. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
You think it was because we were just attuned differently to those games? I don't think that was that scary.
Excuse me.
Bless you.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I remember playing it in my dorm room with my buddies and freaking out when the freaking thing slid across the window.
Oh, that was so fucking awesome.
Oh, it's awesome, yeah. But I remember being freaked out by that. I don't think we'd really played a game quite like that. That and then Silent Hill came out, and we'd never really been scared by games before.
See, what Dead Space does that is really cool is give you these different weapons, and then as I knew from the demos that I had done of it, it does really do the find out how to properly dismember the grotesque thing that's coming at you and kill it effectively. I guess you could have, like, if you're used...
But there's no creativity in that. At least, I didn't find there to be creativity in that. I found there to be, well, this is the one way to get rid of this type of monster, yeah, and I better do that, or else it's going to kill me.
Yeah, and of course, add in their stasis, which if you use liberally... I mean, I don't think I have a I don't seem to have much of an ammo problem because I use stasis a lot. And then once I have a stasis, it's just easy to just like slice and dice.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, Ginsu them.
A lot of people are going to disagree. Yeah.
A lot of people are going to disagree with us, but go ahead.
Well, I found that, I mean, first off, I'm with you that I don't really like survival horror as a genre. Like, I'll play, like, maybe for
no, don't
first
put words
minutes.
In my mouth. I love Resident Evil. I love survival horror.
Like 4, though.
You just said that you're not really a fan of survival horror.
I said I'm not a fan of scary shit.
That's survival horror.
Survival horror isn't really scary.
Says who? Of course it's scary.
I don't think so.
It's subjective, though. You have to admit that every game scares people differently.
Yeah,
it's meant to be. Yes. Survival horror is meant to be scary.
I guess maybe it's a
it's
matter
meant to be
of opinion.
Putting you in a position of powerlessness as opposed to.
See, now that I actually did. Either of you play the original Silent Hill?
Oh yeah,
game was fucking amazing because you were walking around with that stupid radio the whole time. It would start going. You'd be like, oh,
and you found a shotgun and had one shot.
Yeah,
and you're like, I better not shoot this guy.
Yeah, that was awesome
because I don't want to waste my one shot that I've got. And he was about running away most of the time.
Exactly, but
and that's how the first Resident Evils were as well. It wasn't they weren't
that's
shooters.
True too. That's true. They were
until
very
four changed
definite.
Everything.
Yeah, four.
But I meant to say
everything.
5. I loved 5, but
I liked 5 also.
You did?
Yeah. We've had that conversation before.
We have.
Yes.
Speaking of Mark McDonald, he and I had the freaking. Rivalry over 5 because he hated it.
I don't hate 5. Here's my thing about 4 and 5 is that they're not, although I understand because I've seen the movie and people make fun of me for liking that, I understand the like line they drew between them to connect the Umbrella era to the post-Umbrella era, but I really liked all the shit they were doing with Umbrella, and just fundamentally, I miss the T-Virus and I miss Umbrella, and I don't care about all the other crap that's mutated out of that and all the other power struggles. I want to go back to T-Viruses and stupid mega corporations and crazy hidden bases.
So you're gonna super excited for Operation Raccoon City, then.
I am super excited for Operation and Slant 6 is good. Slant 6, I mean, I don't know about them doing like a weird multiplayer co-op game in that, but it could be cool. It could be awesome. Sure.
Yeah, they said 4-player co-op, and then they're going to combine the stories of Resident Evil 2 and 3, and you get to play as Umbrella Security this time.
And it was the second part of that that concerns me is I did not like Nemesis.
Mm.
I didn't like being chased. I don't like timer shit.
Speaking my language now, bro.
So, you know, I just didn't...
End timers.
Yeah, and Nemesis was like... Nemesis was punishing with that because, like, if you screwed up, like, here comes Nemesis, you're fucked. Sorry. Goodbye. Dead.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I wasn't a big fan of that. Dead Space does a lot of things that are very cool. So, like, well, we were kind of sidetracking because you were saying you don't like it because it's scary.
Right.
But I don't think it's scary. It just startles you. It's like, most of it is, oh, got God behind you. Bah!
The scary part about it is for me is that when I'm playing shooters, I like being able to just like spray bullets because that's the easiest way for me to kill. I know I need to work on my technique. Okay, that's a whole other conversation for another time.
I think we should have it right now.
Well, the thing about Dead Space is that it takes a very specific technique to kill the necromorphs, and I didn't like that because it was too difficult, and they would come at me with their claws and their stupid
faces.
Can you imagine how poorly this section's gonna go in the forums? Be like, oh my god, the girl doesn't want to have to shoot the little thing. She's gonna have to just spray bullets.
That's fine. They can call me out on that. And it's not because I'm a girl, because Jessica Villarreal, my
also
co-host on this Week in Video Games, is a humongous Dead Space fan. And she loves gore and she loves scariness and all of that stuff. And she's a girly girl, too. So it's not about being a girl. It's about personal preference.
We shouldn't have talked about this without Mattis. Mattis is the voice of love for this.
Well,
series.
I want to see if I can make myself come back to it. Because here's the other frustration I have is that it's as it's gotten, you know, especially into the third and fourth chapters, it started to become very much a door closes and here comes a shit ton of those fucking alien dudes.
Yeah, it's a chore.
And it becomes, well, door closes. Oh, how many are they going to throw at me this time?
Yeah.
And it starts to get... it becomes very shootery and very like, okay, here's a bump in the night startle, but then you're just going to be attacked by a ton of these guys.
There's a distinction that I'm just realizing between games I play where I do something difficult and I go, oh my God, I never want to do that again. Thank God I got past it.
Mm.
And oh my God, that was so much fun. So hard, I can't wait to play that again.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think there's a real distinction between those two types of experiences. And I don't know exactly what forms one as opposed to the other, but I often have that experience of like, thank God I got past that. I don't ever want to go through that again.
Well, with Portal 2 coming up, what did you think about some of the later challenges that require, you know, some pretty in Portal as you get towards the end? There's some challenges like kind really. Of stuff. So which ones do those fall? How did those fall for you?
For sure, it's in the I can't wait to do that again. For all right. Portal, that kind of crazy difficult. I'm glad it worked this time. Thing is, I'd love to try that again. I'd love to, yeah.
Hmm.
And I don't know exactly why that is, but there are certain experiences that are just so intense and so draining and so, and I find that to be the case with games like Dead Space and others, where you threw a lot of bad guys at me and I'm not having fun dealing with them. I'm stressed. I understand that it's a heightened experience that is exactly what you're going for.
And there are a lot of people who like that. Now, I think that I think you just hit the nail on the head for what a lot of people do like about the game.
Sure. Maybe it just happens to be that the three of us aren't those people.
Yeah.
But yeah. It's not my favorite thing.
No, I agree. You want games to be fun. And like, you know, Garnett said, some people really love that aspect of gameplay, like the harder the better. And I'm like, well, if
but we were talking about Vampire Smile earlier.
Yeah.
I don't think
which is hard.
I don't think it's just about being hard.
But
I think that's the distinction.
That's hard in a different way, though. That's hard in like a you need to learn how to use all of your different styles of combat effectively.
And how is that different from Dead Space needing you to learn how to use your different weapons effectively against the monsters you're facing?
Because those little hand-drawn guys in Vampire Smile aren't nearly as scary as the Necromorphs.
I think it comes down to a feeling of this is bum, difficult.
Bum, bum, bum.
This is difficult, but I'm in control of the situation. I'm, you know, there's something different. There's something different about getting your ass kicked in Street Fighter or something, where it's like I recognize my skill level isn't up to snuff, but I was in control of everything I was doing.
So in Dead Space, you don't feel like you are as controlled.
I'm like I said, I'm just coming to this right now, so I may not be as articulate about it as I'd like to be. But I feel like in those situations, I'm not making decisions. So far as I'm trying to survive, and it is called survival horror, so maybe that is what they want. But I feel like I'm just, God, I just want to just please let there be a health thing around this corner, because I just need to get past this, because I don't ever want to do this again. Rather than,
you know what,
making decisions.
I think that what you're describing is a little different than what it is for me. It's what you're describing to me sounds like the game is working as intended. But it just doesn't click. Like, you don't like that experience.
Perhaps.
Because I think that the things that you're talking about, the tension level, the like needing to get to that, that goes back to those conversations we've had before about like save spots and like how frequent should save spots be.
Right.
And are they spaced out enough to actually make you tense and make you feel like you're playing the game? And, you know, I don't get into that. But I think that specifically you're really narrowing it down and talking about those things. And there'll be people listening. They're like, well, that's exactly what I like about it.
And that may very well be the case. I think that what I tend to like in interactive entertainment is decision making, is moment to moment feeling like I'm in control, not in a I can win all the time, not in an easy / hard distinction, but in a because it was hard and I didn't win has to do with my poor decision making or my lack of skill, rather than just I had no idea what was going on. I didn't know where to go next. It's all happening right in front of me, and it just feels overwhelming. I don't know. I'm not being articulate about this, and I wish I was. But
no, I know exactly what you're talking about, and it leads into the other game that I've been playing, which we're going to talk about later, I guess.
All right. We'll talk about that when we come back on the other side. And still to come, we have COM64, which is one of the songs that Jim Guthrie created for Super Brothers Swords and Sorcery, and you can get the EP right now on iTunes and through other outlets, which we'll have at the end of the show. So stick around. We'll be back with all that and more.
The local player. The local player. The local player,
which is Jeff Cannata.
And then we also have the Canadian hustler, Zav D'Amatos.
Zav! What's up, fellas? Oh, yeah, I love it. Now I hustle my way across the border, motherfucker.
NAFTA worked for me.
Oh, yeah, I love it.
It has the auto-tune, right? It makes you go like this.
Oh, yeah, I love it.
Hold on, I'm getting rid of my phone so that it will be no more GSM fail.
I don't actually know that word.
Fail.
Fail.
has this weird body dysmorphia.
I don't actually know that word.
It means their bodies look fucking wrong.
I was wrong, and I'll be wrong again.
The Canadian Hustler.
Soon to be legal alien.
This is riveting. Riveting audio.
Powered on whimsy.
Listen, I've never seen a power suck in this room. I have no idea how we're powering this show.
I think we'll call that one Powered by Fail.
I can clarify my body dysmorphia comment. Body dysmorphia, by the way, is not knowing, is having a different image in your head than what the reality is. Anyway, which is basically what's happening in that game.
So Andrew was trying to defend during the break that that has nothing to do with her being a girly girl, that she doesn't like scary things.
That's right.
I don't like scary things either. Like, see, now if you'd listen to some of the other shows, we'd already know that the only scary movie, and well, not the only, but one of the only scary movies I like, and probably the reason I thought Dead Space would be good, is the one that just flew out of my head.
Event Horizon.
Event Horizon, which people hate and tell us it's terrible, but for some reason I'm like just fascinated by it. I know.
I had an example popped into my head of exactly what I'm talking about, which is
body dysmorphia.
I have a lot of friends who have told me that they couldn't get through BioShock because it's too scary.
Really?
Yeah. And
because of like the splicers and stuff?
I guess. I don't know. I mean, it's a scary game. It's a scary. This is a scary.
Oh no,
situation.
There's definitely
you walk
some,
into
well and
effed up stuff.
And they create some really cool, creepy scenes with like the old music and you know the light and shadow and like pieces of machinery that are working but not
anything
really working old-timey right.
Anything old timey is inherently creepy. You know, like the old.
Oh
like,
yeah.
Everything's a little too happy. You know, and you're like walking around a desolate area. It's a little creepy. But
absolutely.
I will say it's one of my. That's in my top 10 of all time. That game and. One of the things I love about it is exactly what I'm talking about. As scary and on edge and tense as I felt in that game, I always felt like I was in control of my faculties. I was in control of the different encounters. I knew, like, I'm going to use my powers and my weapons in concert. And I'm never – it's never the experience that I'm talking about with Dead Space. For example – I'm totally terrified when I'm going to engage a big daddy in that game, but it is at a time and place of my choosing, and I can set everything up, and it's still an intense, you know, tension-filled moment, but I am in control of that moment, and sometimes I fail, and sometimes it's hard, and all that stuff is still there, and people are going to say, yeah, but you never really die. Eh, that's not important. It is still a challenging moment, but I feel like I am making the decision. I am in control of how that event goes down, and then my losing in that moment is because of my bad tactics or my bad dexterity or whatever it is.
Yeah, see, I really love scary movies, and the thing I don't like about scary games is that when you're watching a scary movie, you're like a passive participant. You can close your eyes or curl your ears or walk away whenever you want, but when you're playing a scary game, you have to actively be part of the scariness. And that's what I don't like about
so
it.
Scary.
See, right, exactly. That's what I
actually,
don't like about it.
It's actually that she's a smart girl. She's not walking down to the lake at 2 a.m. and waiting for Jason to come out. She's like,
really?
Fuck it. She's like, I'm not putting...
Just don't land on the planet, Isaac.
Yeah, seriously.
Why are you landing on the planet? Get back in your spaceship, Isaac.
What are you, dumb? What are you, new? Yeah, so I get it. Okay, so she's a smart girl. She's like, I'm not going down there. What the hell's wrong with this guy? Why do I have to push the stick? I'm not going through that door. I go through that door. Shit's going to happen.
Exactly.
Just stay right here. Bring me a ding-dong.
If I don't even put the game in my Xbox, the bad shit won't happen.
It's never going to happen.
Precisely.
I'm so smart not to have to put myself through that experience.
It's interesting. I still don't think survival horror of necessity means that you have to have the cheap scares. I just don't know. I don't think you have to have the cheap scares. I think you have to have tension. I think you have to have something that really – I think it has to be really engaging because it has to be – the more it pulls you into the moment and doesn't break the illusion of being in the game, the more it's able to get you when it gets you.
Yeah.
You know?
Give me an example of a
whereas
scary
that, so that, maybe that's
that
the problem.
Like.
Maybe that's the problem with Dead Space is it becomes to me – like I walk by – like now I'm like walking down a corridor and I see – the like air vent on the wall. I'm like, well, at some point in time, that air vent's going to break, Yeah. And their dude's going to pop out of it.
Or I'm going to walk in the room. There's a dead body there that's not really dead. I know it's not really dead. I'm just waiting for it to. And there it is. And was it the moment I was not ready for that?
So.
But what's an example of a scary game you like?
An example of a scary game that. I don't think I played a scary game that I thought was scary.
You didn't play Descent, did you? Or not Descent, whatever that begins with an A. Just came out.
No.
Amnesia?
I didn't.
Amnesia?
No, Mattis told me I wouldn't like it.
Why not? I think it's exactly what you're talking about, where it's all the psychological scare.
Yeah,
of...
I probably would be scared and I probably wouldn't like it. Because I actually don't like those kind of... See, then there's that
is it,
thing.
Isn't that game actually... called Amnesia?
What's yes,
it?
And then yeah. I don't actually like being scared. Which is why
so
I like survival horror.
Blew your own argument out of the way.
No, that's why
I like games that are actually scary. Except that I don't like.
What
those.
About Singularity? Did you think that was scary?
No.
See, I thought that was kind of scary.
Really? What was scary about that?
I don't know. Maybe it was just like the random. You were walking mm-hmm. through, you know, the
girl.
Welcome to the Halloween episode of We Can Confirm. By the way,
this is not Halloween at all. I mean, none of these are scary, and so.
It's subjective. I told you that mm-hmm. earlier. I can think it's scary if I want to.
If you're a girl.
Whatever, Garnett. I'm going to beat you up after this.
It's true. She will.
I'm just a gentleman. I could never swing back.
iPad 1 heavier.
It is heavier. She can break that thing over my head. I'll be out cold.
Plus one to damage to brain.
But then the funny thing is that Dead Space, I think that if I hadn't had such high expectations, I would enjoy it more as an action game, because it is a cool action game, because I do like the mechanic part of it. I do like the weapons management part of it. I do like all of the like upgrading your...
I don't think we should talk about it anymore. Right. I think that we beat that
Let's
dead horse of a three-year-old game or whatever it is.
Whatever. Fine. Did you want to talk about some other game?
Beyond Good and Evil HD?
People don't like that game.
What? Whatever. People love that game.
It's an awesome game.
And
did you get scared by that one too?
No, I didn't. Thank you very much. I actually was very resistant to it the first couple levels. I was like, what's the deal with this pig?
Oh, you never played it originally?
No, I never played the original.
It wasn't designed for two sticks.
Oh, shit.
Is there something you'd like to say?
No. Everyone has said it for me. I'm wrong about stuff periodically. Frequently. Whatever. I thought it was a... It doesn't matter.
Go ahead. Not. You thought it was a Nintendo 64 game?
Never mind. I was talking out of my ass, as I frequently do. Go ahead. You never played the original, but you like it?
Yeah, I'm getting into it. I had an interesting conversation with a couple pals of mine over at Machinima about female protagonists in games mm-hmm. and how there's so few of them that are not like overtly sexualized. Mm-hmm. And we kind of agreed that Jade was one of those characters that you find in a game that is actually like a strong female protagonist that isn't like, hey, look at my boobies.
Yeah. Hence the game not being a very big success, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Wait. Did you just attribute its failure to Jade's boob size?
No, not directly. But I think a lot of it was a tough sell to its audience just because it was a little more sophisticated. I'm giving the game a lot of credit. I think it deserved a bigger audience than it got. And let me ask you a question. Mm-hmm. Did you see Sucker Punch?
No, I did not.
But you know of it.
Because I heard it was horrible.
It is. Yeah. But
I know about the comic, yeah.
Yeah, do you see... that as being empowering, girls kicking ass, wearing very little clothes?
No, it's not, because it goes back to the same thing. And I mean, it's empowering that you have a cast of all female ass kickers. Like, that's pretty cool that you don't need to have a male side by side with the female ass kicker, you know, superhero, whatever you want to call them. But I mean, it goes back to the whole thing. If you look at all the female superhero comic book characters, they're all hyper-sexualized.
Yeah, well, yes, but also if you look at all the male comic book characters, they're all...
Super masculine.
So, yeah. I mean, it cuts both ways. Mm-hmm. But I went on TRS and mentioned that Sucker Punch, I felt, was this very male fantasy of what women should be, and to the movie's detriment. And I got a lot of flack of like, well, girls you fantasize about that just like guys do. Girls fantasize about being hypersexual and kicking ass and being in control and all
only
that
in
stuff.
Dudes' dreams.
That was my position, that it was basically a video game take on the world of like, this is how video games, from a very 14-year-old boy perspective, you know, display women. And I got a lot of people disagreeing with me, so I'm curious a female perspective on that. It seems like you agree with what I'm saying, is that it's very...
Well, I mean, it's just you can't compare this fantasy world to the way that women want to be strong in real life. It's a totally different kind of comparison. If I could be a superhero kicking ass and being like the hottest girl ever, would I want to be? Well, of course. Who wouldn't want to be? But I mean, then again, you're taking away... It's a struggle that women always go through because every woman wants to be a 10. But then the women that aren't 10s are like, well, she's stupid and she doesn't represent strong women. And the smartest women aren't the prettiest women. But any woman that I know would want to be the prettiest woman. It's this horrible cycle that women are put into that our worth is based off our physical look. And, you know, video games play right into that.
Well, I think video games play into that to a large extent because they are aimed at males.
Right. Well, 40% of the gaming market is women. And now mobile games have more female users than male users. So,
well, they're not playing the same games.
It doesn't matter. The ones that get the most money, the ones that get the most attention, and the most marketing are all the ones that are geared towards guys. And I mean, obviously the people that are making the money want it that way because... It behooves them to focus on that.
Do you think that there's...
I don't think that this is as gender exclusive as it's sometimes painted, and that's not going to probably play well, but I think that there are plenty of men of any age who are equally envious of the current crop of Hollywood stars and way men are portrayed in movies as everybody's in incredible fucking shape with sure. amazing washboard abs and a perfect jawline.
Keep going. Talk slower.
And trying to attain that is a equal rat race for many men. And I don't see that it's being completely so gender
specific. Do you think that there is the equivalent of the blockbuster, like the Twilight, which is a blockbuster summer event film for girls, mm-hmm. for the most part, in the video game space? Because I think the reason the funds go where they go in video games is because males, for the most part, are the people that are the guys that stand in line at midnight at GameStop.
Are the purchasers, yeah, the consumer.
And you know, The Sims, I think, is the reason it was the number one game for so long is because of females, not because of males.
Absolutely.
So that, but that's like this long sustained sort of...
Well, of course it is. Women like to torture people.
Oh, okay. What?
The adults are talking, Garnett. So do you think that there is that AAA blockbuster, gotta have it on day one? Because Twilight is that in the movie space.
For girls, absolutely not. There's definitely not. And I had a conversation similar to this with a brand new developing company called Silicon Sisters at GDC, when they are Canadian and it's run by women, and they hire female designers to create games for females.
And they're called Silicon Sisters?
Like Silicon Valley. I know.
No,
I kind of gave her a hard time about it. I was like, I don't know about that, but anyway.
That should be called Boob Friends.
Boob. And
we're called Fake Boobies. We're making games that empower women. FakeBoobies.com. Don't go to FakeBoobies.com. It's not that.
Thank you, Mr. The Adults Are Talking. Well played.
No, but going back to what you're saying, no, there are no AAA blockbuster titles geared for women.
But do you think that that's a potentiality? That somebody could design that game?
Not within the next 5 years. I think maybe down the road, once, you know, the female gaming market gets bigger. But I honestly, like, as a girl gamer, I don't think that girl gaming is ever going to be as big as the guy gaming market.
Ever.
Ever.
Wow.
Like, I just don't. Because I know a lot of my girlfriends that don't play games. Most of the people that I know in the gaming community are men, of course. There are just... You know, as much as I personally tout the statistics about the female in the gaming market, there's just not a lot of girls that stand up and go, this is what I want to see from games. They just go along with whatever's out there.
They just need more chick flicks.
I may have made the same argument before the Twilight phenomenon about movies. I may have said, you know, there's just never going to be, there's going to be the Sex and the Cities and the big mm-hmm. female draw films, but there's never going to be this genre movie that has the same, like, Comic-Con presence as other things. But it happened.
I guess I never thought about it that way, thinking about the movie industry like that, because that's kind of what the rom-com is for. It's for females.
Right. But then, you know, here comes this property that proved, and even Harry Potter to a certain extent, I think gets a lot of its juice from the female audience.
I'm a huge Harry Potter fan.
QED.
Well, I don't know. That's food for thought, I guess.
Anywho, we totally derailed the show, Garnet. I'm sorry.
That's fine. I was just listening because I'm not an adult.
I apologize. Are we still married?
Of course. I wasn't even denying it. I was just like, whatever, pot kettle black. part of the reason I sort of tuned out a little bit there is the whole, like, gender specificity thing amongst games to me sort of feels like a conversation from a few years ago.
But you can't deny that even the games that are coming out now, they're not, I mean, any female character in any AAA
dude, if you want to get into
shooter,
that, if you want to get into that, we need to be more specific about, instead of what those protagonists aren't, what they seem to almost always be, which is white dude.
Yeah.
Because
that.
That's
true.
Really all
Absolutely.
It boils down to. It's always fucking white dude. And we've had this discussion. I've had it with
it's not
a number.
Even just...
We've had this discussion on every one of the shows I've done over the last 6 years. And it still hasn't really changed any. And whether it's Bulletstorm or Uncharted or
It's not even
Gears,
just white dude. It's the same white dude.
It's the same.
It's, the
it's
same
always
sort of dark
the same
haired,
guy. Yeah.
Grizzled, square jawed. Yeah. It's as if every action movie in Hollywood starred the same actor.
Yes, it is. It exactly is. And I don't even, and you know, like we used to have those discussions around gender, and then we for a while had them discussions around race. And I actually think it's just kind of become a familiarity and a, well, this is the guy you make to run this game. I mean, this is the guy.
Yeah.
Of course this is the lead character because that's the guy. It's John Marston.
Yeah.
It's Nathan Drake.
Right.
It's
Commander Shepard.
Commander Shepard.
Mm-hmm.
My Commander Shepard's
Shepard
could
be a chick, yeah.
Mine's a chick too. With a
She's
short
a mean,
hair.
Honestly,
nasty
Commander,
bitch.
Commander Shepard could be whatever
Made
race.
Me really happy too.
Whatever ethnicity you choose. Commander Shepard can be
right.
Any ethnicity.
Right.
The only thing Commander Shepard can't be is obese.
Which is good because you can't kick ass like that if you're obese. I'm just saying.
So when you got into the discussion about Sucker Punch and whether or not it played with women, it sort of sidetracked a little bit off of what I think the big problem with the gaming industry, which is that it's so, can I market this? And I don't know that, I mean, I don't want to cast aspersions on any of the individual designers who are out there making those characters, because I think they really believe in their characters and they really are invested in their characters. Yet at the same time, it is really strange how we keep always having the same prototypical character as the lead character for so many of these games, and it's so hard to say where's somebody different,
well, that's what's so exciting about Niko Bellic, for example.
That was one of the things that was very intriguing about Niko. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
what's his name from San Andreas? I can't remember the character.
CJ was awesome.
Yeah.
CJ was fucking genius. I really liked CJ.
And you did bring up James Marsden, but to Rockstar's credit, they're really one of the only companies that makes a lead character that doesn't look like everybody else and doesn't have the same backstory as everybody else. Isn't Space Marine X from Grizzled Dot?
But the reason I don't want to go too far into that conversation is I don't even know how much I buy into the argument of, I mean, like, what forces are at work there. I mean, it's just weird. I think it's probably most reflective of how few really engaged titles there are and how much how immature the market still is. You know?
I mean, I think it's always going to be. I think it's just
I don't think so.
I think it's just the attitude of games is to be immature.
I disagree.
Do you
with
really?
You.
Yeah.
I disagree.
You get
with you.
Games as a.
I mean, not obviously not every game. There's a lot of really smart.
Do you mean video games or the idea of playing a game?
Video games. Talking about video games. The video game community at large is immature. Look at all the content out there that's on video games. Very few of it is like really super intellectual.
Do you think here's another weird idea?
Present
so let me throw another one at you.
Well, of course.
Do you think that if you're making a game like Prototype, that you feel more comfortable turning a Caucasian dude into that monster than you would any member of a minority.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know. I mean, I'm like, why? So then I'm thinking about more. I'm like, well, Prototype again, white dude. Infamous again, white dude. Like, wow, it's like all the same. It's like so often that same guy.
But even if we sort of abstract this beyond just a race or ethnicity discussion into a why do they all have to look the same?
Mm-hmm.
Into why isn't it? Why isn't there the Steve Buscemi type character?
That's a great question. You know? Also,
yeah. So. That it's not even really about ethnicity. It's more about why can't a lead character in a video game be anything except the idealistic sort of hero abstraction of what a hero should be.
Right. So then to bring it back around, it's because then what happens is you have a game that is an incredibly cool universe, lots of fun mechanics, really fun to play in, and because you have a woman who's not overly sexualized and a pig, you don't know how to sell it.
Yeah.
And you lose people, and you don't get people drawn into it, despite the fact that the fucking game is awesome, and it's really well thought out with good dialogue and good characters and lots of fun things to do. You're like, well, how do we get people engaged in it?
Yeah. And I think it's the first game that sort of introduced that photography thing that then into BioShock and
Pokemon Snap had it.
First?
Pokemon Snap.
Does that predate that?
Yeah, that was a game designed for Winston.
Well done.
All right, look, we really sidetracked. Can we move and do other things now?
Absolutely.
You good with that?
Yeah.
You good with that? All right. Let's do. So before we go anyplace else, I want to make sure that we get in the discussion that was ongoing on Twitter between the Super Brothers, which is at the One Console, and Zach Stern, who is Stern One, and we had this big discussion, and I think it plays very well into the maturity of game design, mm-hmm. because we were talking about how do you build a game, and how do characters, well, I'll just say it exactly what Super Brothers wrote, how do creators, he wants to address, creators looking to involve players in credible narrative need to problem solve this concept of narrative dissonance. And Zach Stern rephrased it as, if you're in a semi-realistic setting plus mass combat, then you have a logical disconnect. How do you resolve this? And specifically, though, so they like taking into shooters. What we're talking about is the fact that we're trying to make these realistic games with like characters that you really get involved in. Let's take a Black Ops where we tried to make the narrative much more powerful and you're like really involved with the character you're playing. And then you kill literally an absurd pile of bodies.
I think Black Ops is not as good an example as something
Homefront.
Like... Well, even that is a military-esque shooter, but something like Uncharted, where you're just a dude. It would be as if you watched Indiana Jones slaughter thousands of people on his way to getting the Ark.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, he's not justified in... By the way, great television program. He's not justified in any respect in murdering all of those people in cold blood.
Absolutely.
And there needs to be dissonance in order to rationalize liking and having feeling affection and identifying with this character that you're supposed to has foibles and he's, you know, he's just a dashing little rogue who, you know, falls in love with women and also is a mass murderer. You know,
self-defense.
Yeah, and just and there's no issue made of that whatsoever.
So that's definitely describing the situation. How could it possibly be solved in the context of games? Or are we doomed, as Andrea said, to never mature any in our games? Are we just stuck and that's what a game is and we're just screwed?
The solution is a thing that we talked about actually a lot in the early episodes of this show, but we haven't talked about it in a while. And that is the idea of coming up with something that is a moment-to-moment action type experience that doesn't involve murdering people. That cracking that nut of achieving that 30 seconds of fun repeated that you need to have in these action games that isn't shooting people. That there's got to be something else there.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I don't necessarily think that there needs to be a solution. I think if people want it to be that way, I think you kind of agree to suspend your disbelief like you do when you watch a movie, because hundreds of people die in movies from action stars too. You know, when you watch these,
I don't know that I'm just accepting that blanket statement. Hundreds of people die.
I think there are movies where that's true.
There are occasional movies,
Rambo or whatever, but those are not as
they're few and far between
as something like say, the Bourne series, where he kills maybe one or two dudes total in that movie.
Well, there are games out there where the goal is actually just to beat people up and not to actually kill them. Like, there's plenty of missions in Assassin's Creed Brotherhood that are like that.
But you're an assassin who kills hundreds of people.
Well,
you,
I know. Maybe that was a bad example. Maybe that was a bad example to use.
Hundreds of people.
I mean, it is called Assassin's Creed.
But yet, I don't Hitman, much more interesting sort of game of that ilk because you didn't kill hundreds of people.
Mm-hmm.
Just going to throw that. I mean, not saying much more interesting, much more interesting in that one aspect.
Right.
Because it was about finding the mark. As a matter of fact, one of the best ways to succeed in Hitman was to not kill anybody but your mark.
Right.
Interesting. Different sort of game. Just throwing that in there because it does, if you don't have someone killing all the time, then when they do actually kill somebody, much like in a Bourne movie, it's a very powerful moment.
Right.
And like this is like when we used to talk about, you know how much I love spy movies. I like, or especially James Bond stuff. Like Bond stuff, like the thing that would, like the thing that has not been cracked is how to make a nonviolent action game that still keeps people engaged, still has a fun mechanic, still has as fun a mechanic as running around and putting a crosshair on top of people and shooting them moment to moment, where you can just keep doing it, keep doing it, keep doing it, keep doing it, and adding in jumping and covering and all that kind of stuff, but have it be nonviolent. Of course, the best thing they've tried, like I love the games where like we're going to be a tranquilizer gun. It's still a gun, but we're going to be a trank gun.
No, I think the nut to crack isn't making it, i.e., not violent or toning down the violence. It's coming up with something else that Nathan Drake does when he gets into that next arena moment that is a break from the exploration moment that isn't a shooting gallery.
So, do you think that the emphasis on melee combat that they're putting into Uncharted 3 will help?
I think that's cool, but I would love to figure out something to do that is different.
Well, wait, I mean, if these guys are...
Why do you guys think this is so necessary? I'm just curious.
Because it's exactly what you mentioned, I think, with Resistance, where it's like, yeah, another one of these. At a certain point, it's like...
While you think for a second.
Sure.
Because for me, big a fan as I am of James Bond, I can't be James Bond and killing guys all the time, because James Bond knows the implications and ramifications of having a license to kill and never ever kills anybody without it being something that is absolutely necessary and reasoned out and thought through, and it's an important thing. He doesn't just randomly go around gunning guys down right and left.
Arkham City and Arkham Horror, or Arkham Asylum, excuse me, handle that well, because Batman is part of the character, inherent in the characters. I don't kill people and I don't shoot people.
It's true.
So I think that game handles that in an effective way. But even that is replacing arena shooting gallery with arena beat 'em up moment. Which is cool, and believe me, I'm not saying we just need a less violent video game. I'm saying,
well, the point of this was, keep in mind, to go back to the piece that we brought up originally, is that how do you have a credible story?
Exactly.
So if you want to just do an action game, there's no reason you can't just do Black Ops, right? It's just that don't expect me to get drawn into this story as a credible story of a jailbroken secret agent who goes on this whole wild adventure, because he kills so damn many people it gets ridiculous.
Right. And I think that's why, for me, Uncharted is the best example, because you have a story where if you contextually put in his actions, totally throws out of whack the whole balance of who that person is. If you take into account, like, the story that they're telling in the cutscenes compared to the person he is in the action moments, completely don't mesh at all. And that's where the dissonance is required. You have to go, oh, now this is the video game part where I shoot all the bad guys, rather than I'm playing this character that I see depicted in this story who really wouldn't behave that way. Or if he did, there would be much different consequences and ramifications of him psychologically.
Yeah, but isn't the whole idea of playing a video game that it's a break from reality, that it doesn't have to be credible, that these don't have to be realistic stories? Sure, you want the characters in certain settings to look as real as possible, but this part of the fun of playing the video game is that you can do things that wouldn't be possible in real life.
Well, but so are we then doomed to have games never be experiences that touch me on a level because I feel like it could have happened? You know, there are novel experiences, there are film experiences, there are lots of other mediums I'm moved in a different way and I'm drawn in a different way because I can suspend my disbelief much easier because there's no dissonance required. There's no requirement for me to go, oh, now I'm in a different part of this experience that doesn't have any basis in reality.
I guess that thought never crosses my mind when I play games. I never once think...
You play them for the mechanics.
Well, not always. I play sometimes for story. Like, Mass Effect a lot is story, not mechanics. But that, again, has a huge RPG element to it.
And a huge shooter element, at least in the second one.
In the second one, yeah. But I don't...
Well, Commander Shepard takes down a ridiculous number of enemies over
but
the course
Commander
of
this. Shepard also acknowledges, when in conversation with people, you know, when Commander Shepard tries to prevent somebody else from doing something wrong, they say, well, we've killed hundreds of people or thousands of people. You don't need to do it or whatever. Like...
I'm handling it for everyone.
No, the example that comes up is the situation when you go on Thane's loyalty mission and you stop his son, Colette, from committing the assassination and Commander Shepard goes on this rant about... listen, the game's been out forever. If you haven't played it yet, don't bitch to me about it being a spoiler.
Although you can get it for free if you buy it on Dragon Age 2. Anywho.
So, I don't think there has to be credibility in games. I think that eventually that maybe somebody will come up with something great, and I would love to see someone attempt that, and I would be really interested in playing a game that was meant to play out like it would in real life, but I don't think games need that.
It's a difficult question, and here's what we'll do is we'll keep an eye on the comments thread on shacknews.com this week and see what your suggestions are on how you would overcome this challenge. Make a credible story, make a credible game, have it still be in the action milieu, still like, you know, you're an action hero, you're still that guy we were talking about earlier, but you're not pulling the trigger 100,000 times and, you know, mowing down tons and tons of guys. And you can't just use a trank gun. That's not fair. It's cheating.
And we will reiterate again, there is a place for those. It's not that we don't want those killing shooter fun.
Yeah,
yeah,
no, this is all about, this is about, like,
it's about having an option of the other direction.
Exactly. Exactly. Because, you know, we all are all about the narrative now. We need Brian back to get the mechanics back in here. Just playing. We love you all, and we love swords and sorcery. And this is COM64, as put together by Jim Guthrie for the Super Brothers Sword and Sorcery EP, which is available now on iTunes. Go check it out. Right now, you can actually go get the whole EP from the... you don't actually have this down right here, Del Rio. You have these backwards. However, you can get that from the iTunes store. And Swords and Sorcery, the game, is available now for iPad and coming soon for the iPhone.
And I'm glad we got to highlight the music because last week when I was talking about Sword and Sorcery, right before I talked about the music, we got sidetracked, and I never got around to it. And music is such a wonderful sound, and music is such a wonderful part of that game. I think it deserves to be noted as such.
I'm posting your picture, by the way.
What? Okay.
I'm just saying that this man wishes he could recall his finishing move. We had an awesome break. where a very pensive Jeff Cannata tried to recall his finishing move that he came up with yesterday and was awesome.
It was.
So in about 28 minutes, you'll get to hear his new one, which will also be awesome, but it'll be improvised. Totally.
Can I get a suggestion of a location that could fit in this room?
Yeah. So let's do the news. This is the front page. And that's right, there's no jingle. Because Jeff says he feels like the whole jingle thing has gotten contrived and forced. And
yeah, it happened organically the first time.
Yeah, so
I want it to happen organically again.
You want it to happen organically.
Yeah.
So we're going to get it from Whole Foods?
Yeah.
All right, so... Exactly. Or we could just wait for someone to send us a news jingle.
Yeah, and it doesn't even have to have us in it. It could just be... Or it could.
It could.
Or not.
I don't know. All right, so we have all kinds of good things to get to, and I want to start off with the latest update from Sony on their efforts to raise money for the recovery in Japan, which is even more meaningful. If you haven't, I mean, you probably already know this tomorrow. Hopefully by the time this comes out, we'll all know that it was no big deal. But there was yet another strong earthquake today in Japan. This one was about 40 miles off the coast, so the tsunami warning was not nearly as high. But it was a 7.4 shock. Still a lot of activity on the fault line there. So if you have not, please, through any number of the various mechanisms that gamers have gotten motivated through, from iHeartJapan to Play for Japan to just the American Red Cross, please contribute. And you can also do that contribution through the PlayStation Network. It was recently revealed by Sony that $1.32 million has now been donated through the to the relief through the PlayStation Network.
It's wonderful.
You can donate in pretty a wide range of increments. You can just go onto the PlayStation Network store, and under new releases, there's a donation tab. You can do $2, $5, $10, $20, and I think $50 increments, and donate all every dollar of it, every penny of it goes directly to the American Red Cross Japan Tsunami and Earthquake Relief Fund. And if you do, you get a really pretty wallpaper as well. So, not that the wallpaper should get you to do it, but anyway.
I hope people...
help if you can.
Yeah.
And if you're not on the PlayStation Network, you can also text Red Cross to 90999 and it'll automatically donate $10. And the charge will just appear automatically on your monthly bill. You can text as many times as you want. And I've done it that way. And I know it's really easy to do.
I do that too because I am lazy as a dog. And like that's so easy because it's like on my T-Mobile. It's like whatever. It's painless.
Exactly.
Did you guys, either of you guys take part in the Gamers Heart Japan thing either? No? Did you? You did.
Yeah.
You did.
You didn't watch me? I watched you.
You did? Well, we should tell people about that, too.
I watched you.
It's a cool thing.
You didn't watch me.
I didn't. I apologize.
I watched you.
I'm sorry. I'll watch you. I haven't watched you yet. I will. I'm saving you to be watched.
We are kind of married, aren't we?
You're totally married. Oh, my God.
Not in this state. Anyway, Gamers Heart Japan is this wonderful project that put a bunch of game journalists, game reviewers, game creators together talking about why Japan is wonderful and all in an effort to raise funds. So I point people to that. It's all over the place.
Yep.
You can go to GamersHeartJapan.com.
Put together by Greedy Productions, who does The Electric Playground, and it has some great stuff from Peter Molyneux, and I think
tons of people.
Jaffe's in there, Cerny's in there. Yeah. Like it's just amazing the number of people who came together in an outpouring of love to just say, hey, we love Japanese games. We love everything they've been to the business. If you can, please donate any way you can. Which is great. And, you know, it's sad because oftentimes the rest of the time we hear about money is going to be like the next three or four stories, which are all about people wanting money because they feel they've been wronged or something. Which is, I mean, I'm not saying it's bad. It's just like we're back to like the normal stuff.
Yeah.
First one being the Madden creator suing Electronic Arts for owed royalties.
John Madden?
The Madden's, yes, the creator of John Madden. In other words, God. God wants his money, damn it. Her money. Robert Antonic, and this story came from Reuters, and one of the things that they did include in their story was that this is not the first time that this clash has come up. Evidently, there is language going back to his original deal with EA for royalties stemming from all of the football games that would originate from the work he did on Madden Football, which was originally released for Apple II, Commodore 64, and MS-DOS back in 1998.
1988.
Well, I have 98 in my story, and my news writer wrote it, so obviously. Wow. Obviously, you must
makes
be right.
More sense to
shut up! Shut up!
MS-DOS.
I'm just saying.
God damn it, who put this on the teleprompter? Total Ron Burgundy moment. Yikes! God, now I'm going to have to go brew a beard. At least we get to go to the bar afterwards. That's awesome.
Yes, indeed.
Now I'm completely thrown off. Anyway, he's seeking tens of millions of dollars. Who copy edits this fucking Shaq News place? Jesus.
I'm seeking tens of millions of dollars as well.
So I think what's going to be interesting to see, and I would bet that they were probably... There's like all kinds of elements that come into the story. One of them being how many courts across America have even developed the degree of sophistication to get down to the nuts and bolts of arguing how closely tied is the PlayStation 3 and 360 version of Madden Football to the 1988 version of Madden that was put out for Apple II. You know, is it simply because it's a football game? Mm-hmm. Are they the same?
I mean, I bet they use the same core engine.
Yeah. So the problem is, how do you ever try that? And how do you, like, can you ever build up the education? I would guess that one of the reasons it's been, you know, something they've bickered about or, you know, had this dispute over already is that it's hard to arrive at a reasonable conclusion, because obviously the guy who originally started it looks at how much money has been made off of the series and says, well, obviously, you know, hey, look, I started this thing. I should have some degree of involvement in it. And EA says, well, yeah, you started the thing and look how far we've come with it and what we've done with it. It's like a whole other, like, it's something entirely different now. The answer's in between. I would imagine that they will in some way settle. Who knows what it'll be. We'll see. EA Sports is also, so the two things in basketball world for EA Sports. Number one, they did really well with Jam. Everybody loved it. Did you play Jam last year?
Mm-hmm.
Did you play Jam?
Heck yeah.
It was really fun. We had a great time with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
You ready for more?
Am I?
I don't know. What are you going to... I don't know. I read this story.
As long as
like,
Sarah Palin isn't in the game again.
What do you got to get the Palinator?
How much time do we have?
All this girl-on-girl hate. Look at all
she's
this.
She's a role model for strong women.
Can I barf a little bit on air?
I think you just did.
Oh my God, she is not. And it's always frustrating to me when I have conversations with women about it. Don't get me started.
She hunts. She skins large animals.
So?
Wild game.
She also plays sweet hoops in NBA Jam.
What we were talking about.
So yes, NBA Jam on Fire Edition coming for PlayStation and Xbox 360, both on downloadable. It's not going to be, at least it's not indicated as a box, it's indicated as a downloadable title. Has AI improvements, Jam Arena, Road Trip, which is a cooperative online campaign, Tag Mode and Team Fire both come back, and more NBA Jam, I shit you not, it says this, hotness.
Sweet.
Awesome.
Yeah. I don't know what else you need to add to it. I mean, the problem with it is that the NBA Jam was really, really great job of doing NBA Jam, and NBA Jam is, at the end of the day, it's just
done.
Jam.
We don't need more.
This is the same problem that that Midway ran into with Blitz.
Yep.
Like once you make a really good one, you can just sort of like leave it out there and have a great time with it.
Roster update?
But even Jam, maybe you do it's roster like, updates, or maybe
yeah,
you
these guys are still in it.
Or market it again, or just like it's a great game. There's no reason to forget about it. I mean, partly it's just indicative of how much the churn in the business is of, well, we got to make another one. Like, we can't just keep selling. We can't just keep selling that Jam we have. People won't buy it. It's not the new Jam. We got to make the new Jam.
New Jam.
New Jam. Strawberry.
They should call it New Jam. That'd be cool.
The other information that came out of EA Sports in the same release was Peter Moore. Who is the EA Sports president, snuck in this little comment on the fate of the NBA Sim game, which he also conspicuously did not call NBA Elite, because I'm going to guess that that name will never be spoken again. He says, as planned, our next NBA simulation title is in development at our Tiburon studio in Orlando. We have top talent on the game, and we're giving the new development team time to develop a superior experience. We're making great strides and looking forward to launching a new game next year. So it was planned that you'd not get Elite done and then have to take 2 years off because it was such a disaster?
No.
Yeah.
None of that was
planned. As planned. Everything's going exactly as planned. Keep firing, assholes. Yeah. I don't know. We'll see how Elite turns, whatever they're going to call it. What are they going to call it?
Even more Elite.
Yeah. I don't know. I think you know what? I would recommend to them, go back to Live. It was dumb to abandon Live in the first place. NBA Live was a great brand and a great game before 2K kicked you down the hall. Mm-hmm. Don't be babies about it. Fucking stand up and, you know, go in there. and make a damn great live game. Make an NBA live game that's really good. What?
I think that they should just forget about it. Let it go. Like, NBA 2K11 was an amazing basketball simulation game. I think that they should just...
You want no competition?
I think they should just have the Jam, you know, license and then continue on with, like, the, you know, the kind of whimsical fun that NBA Jam is and not try to compete with 2K.
Hmm.
I think it's going to be difficult. I think you're going to end up with two games that are almost identical.
It's true. I mean, you could make a pretty good argument that there really is no need for multiple titles in sports. But then the, you know, the counter argument to that is then everything stagnates. And through competition, you get the guys pushing each other harder. I mean, certainly you saw how well NFL 2K pushed Madden to improve in an era when it had really, like, you know, in that end of the PS1 and then going into PS2. Like, when it went to PS2, it was like really sort of like, oh, we better get our game on, because like the first PS2 version of Madden was Andrea wanted to talk about this one. This is a Australian retail flyer. Why is it always Australian retail flyers? They just must not have very good security.
It's particularly Game Australia that has a lot of these leaks.
Gay Australia.
Game Australia.
Do you like fish sticks?
No, I don't.
I love them. I love them in my mouth. What? I don't get it.
So this flyer from the Australian retailer was leaked, and it had the information on the next Call of Duty DLC pack, which is allegedly entitled Escalation, which will have five new maps. Those five new maps, allegedly, would be Seize the Zoo, Take the Hotel, Secure the Convoy, Raid the Stockpile, and Survive Call of the Dead. Mm-hmm. All right, you guys aren't interested. Coming first.
No, it's good. It sounds cool.
It's part of their deal. It'll come first on the Xbox 360 and then later on PlayStation 3. We did contact Activision, and they basically said, we don't really have anything to comment on right now, but as soon as there is, we will let you know.
No, surprising no one.
Exactly. Everyone knew another DLC was coming.
Yeah. At least one.
Yeah, right. Well, they're guessing that they're going to be releasing them in 3-month increments up until the new Call of Duty this fall.
Meanwhile, Jason West and Vince Zappella continue to... I'm trying to think of how to say this without sounding awful. Continue to figure out how to get some of the money they feel that they're owed for the blood, sweat, and tears that they put into the Call of Duty franchise, which was not insignificant. This story, they've added fraud charges to their suit against Activision. And I feel really bad for them because I read this story, and GameSpot had the break on this that we caught. And I believe this probably it really resonates with me. And I also think that there's absolutely no way they're going to get it to stand up in court. The gist of what's laid out here in these three paragraphs is that they signed an agreement with Activision that gave them some... It was part of the deal when Activision was acquiring Vivendi. And it gave them some... it's called a Memorandum of Understanding for those of you who are legal eagles. And the this memorandum of understanding was important for them to secure the Vivendi deal, and it gave West and Zampella bargaining power. It also gave them creative control over the franchise, over Call of Duty, and it was what guaranteed them future income from eligible games based off of that franchise. So the memorandum of understanding included a clause in there that they only got paid so long as they remained employees of Activision. And though they were uncomfortable, they say, signing the document, they were given verbal assurances that, no, they would never be fired because those guys create... Because you guys
created...
Those are
the best kind of assurances, by the way.
Yeah.
Verbal ones.
And I can see... I mean, you can totally see this playing out. You can see, like you guys are the stars. You're the best. We love you. You make Call of Duty. We want you to be here. This will never change. Of course, we will never get rid of you, Jeff Cannata. We love you.
Thanks.
We want you to be on the show.
Assurance.
We want you to be on the show for forever.
Awesome.
But at least this one's recorded, right? Like, these aren't even recorded. These are all like conversations, and you can totally see this happening. I mean, think about it. They're in the heyday. They're making tons of money. Everybody's super happy, right? Everybody's like living high on the hog, And they're hearing that, and they're like, even if they're a little skeptical, they're like, ah, fuck it. You know what? We're making great money. Everything's great. What could possibly go wrong?
Mm-hmm.
And then they find out, well, wait, you guys are doing other Call of Duty games in other studios, and I thought we had creative oversight on this. What are you guys doing? Are you guys doing this stuff? I just don't know how they come out of this on top, because unless they can document, you know, unless they can produce some sort of documentation, it sounds like they got a really tough argument to make because they signed the memorandum. Sounds like. I mean, obviously, all in the court documents, but I feel bad for them because that I can totally see that scene unfolding and them getting screwed out of it.
Yeah.
And that sucks because they did put a lot of work into it. I mean, whatever else. I mean, I'm not a big legal guy. I'm not into the legal side of video gaming, so I haven't really followed that story to the degree that I needed to talk about the rest of it. But this part I read and I was like, yeah, I can see that happening.
I think it kind of speaks to the corporate climate at large in America right now. You get these people at the top that want to make as much money as possible, and they don't care who they have to, you know, screw over along the way to get it. And
there's been accusations about that methodology at Activision.
Oh, yeah. There's been a lot of rumors about that. I mean, and not just at Activision. I'm sure it's happening at other places as well. It's sad to see, you know, some guys that put a lot of hard work into what could arguably be called the most successful franchise of all time. And, you know, not get their fair share when clearly Activision is making billions off of it.
Yep. And another story that drives home that story, that notion about Activision, is a report coming out of Edge where they spoke to some of the former senior staff at Bizarre Creations. And it's an interesting story. Evidently, Bizarre actually had the opportunity at the end of the process to potentially buy themselves back from Activision. One of the reasons they didn't pursue that was because they felt like if they could get a outside publisher or an outside party to purchase them, that they'd have better financial wherewithal.
Solvency.
Yeah, for the entire group. Because one thing that happened was the group had ballooned to a very large size as an internal development arm of Activision, much larger than they had been evidently when they were just Bizarre Creations. But here's one thing that really resonates with the Infinity Ward story. Former creative director Martin Chudley, I hope I pronounced his name correctly, talks about the Activision change in atmosphere around the office once Activision bought the company. He says, "We really felt that they would leave our culture alone, and for a while it was fine, but slowly the feeling did start to change. We weren't an independent studio making our games anymore. We were making games to fill slots. Although we did all believe in them, they were more products of committee and analysts, and that's why Blur failed to resonate, and because he called it just too tough to pigeonhole." So, yeah, that kind of sucks. I hope that the Bizarre Creations guys who have gone on to do Lucid Games and Hog Rocket are really successful, because I really, really liked the stuff that they'd done before. And it's a shame to hear, like, you know, game by committee and game to fill slots and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You guys are just not really commenting too much about the news. We're moving right along.
No, I mean, I agree with everything you're saying. I agree with everything you're saying. It's
my God, there's first for everything. So a twist and turn on a little story this week with Andrea's favorite hacker group, Anonymous. It could just be one guy. But basically, the story boils down to that this group, Anonymous, announced that they a great post that they were going to attack Sony in retaliation for the actions taken against GeoHot, and this was going to be OpSony. And OpSony, the announcement post said, "Congratulations, Sony, you have now received the undivided attention of Anonymous. Your recent legal action against our fellow hackers GeoHot and Graf Chocolo has not only alarmed us, it has been deemed wholly unforgivable."
All right. I'm sure Sony's quaking.
A little dramatic.
You're missing the best part of that quote from their blog. "You saw a hornet's nest and you stuck your penises in it."
I don't feel that I need to include that piece.
Why not?
Well,
any opportunity to say penises, I think for sure you would take advantage of.
It does sound like something he would want to do.
I'm not going to say it.
This group is ridiculous.
I think we're fine. We're not that big on the penis. You mean the hacker group? Sorry.
They made some complications with being able to connect to the PlayStation Network about 2 days ago.
So they did a denial of a service attack.
Right.
And it seems like they were somewhat successful.
Yeah, it does. I have a lot of people who said they had trouble with PlayStation Home and accessing the network and the website.
Yep.
And it just doesn't make sense to me why a hacker group would attack the service that their fellow gamers are using.
Well, it didn't make sense to them
either. Because
they're assholes. No, they're not. They're actually very loving, nice people, because now they have announced that they have halted the attack because it was hitting the wrong people. They acknowledge that they were...
The thing I want to follow up on is, you have friends that use Home?
Yes.
You troll.
I'm not trying to troll. I'm honestly curious.
Yes. What,
do they use it daily? They use it frequently?
Yeah.
For what?
I don't know. I'm not asking. I don't know. I didn't ask them specifically.
Bow chicka bow.
To buy stuff?
What are you doing that music? What does that have to do with anything?
You know what people do on Home, right?
They... watch porn? Is that what you're implying?
It's all like, you know, it's like Second Life, right? Home is Second Life.
What?
What?
Did I miss something here? I don't know about this.
I think he's taking advantage of the thing that you told him that he could take advantage of.
Oh, yes. Of course. That's my fault.
You've given him free reign.
What thing?
I think these hackers are ridiculous. I think that they did something, which in my mind is, you know, hey, congratulations, pat yourself on the back. You got the root key for the PlayStation. I don't think it should have been published. I think it was the fact that GeoHot published it and then said, oh, well, I don't condone piracy. I don't condone using this for whatever purposes. I'm just sharing information. It's like, well, fuck,
so
you publish it because you want people to jailbreak the PS3.
No, you don't necessarily. I mean, you don't buy into the... That is a classic argument made by hackers of, we publish security faults to bring awareness to the security faults.
No, I think that's a BS. That's I don't believe that at all.
I think two things can be happening at the same time. I think their free share of information I can support. At the same time, I can think these guys are assholes. Because even though I don't think there's anything wrong with them publishing the key, and I don't necessarily think they should have been sued, putting out a fucking jacked up, cocky machismo, well, you tapped the hornet's nest, so now we're going to come down. Screw you.
The penis on the hornet's nest thing was a little silly, but like.
Down off your high horse. I mean, it's just like, it's ridiculous. So, A, think they're assholes, but I don't necessarily think that.
Mess with hackers and you might get screwed, dude.
But
in a hornet's nest.
It's like, it's such impotent power display. It's such a boring...
Seems to me like they were successful.
At what?
Exactly.
At mildly annoying people for a short period of time?
Well, they have halted the attack, and they said that we realize that targeting the PSN is not a good idea. We have therefore temporarily suspended our action until a method is found that will not severely impact Sony customers. If we did inconvenience users, please know that this was not our goal. The operation is response to Sony's attempt to deprive their customers of products they bought and therefore own wholly and completely. Anonymous will not attempt to fight this by following the exact same course of action. That's a pretty reasonable statement.
Well, you also have to look at what Sony has to gain by suing them. I don't think that they're gaining anything. They're just slapping them on the wrist, because really, you sue them for what?
Pocket lint?
You know what I mean? Exactly.
You sue them to prevent people from doing that in the future.
Well, right, but do you think it's actually going to stop anybody?
I mean, that's... If there's no consequences for the action, then, I mean, that's their position, I would assume.
All right, let's talk about fun stuff.
Yay!
Let's wrap up news on fun stuff. Game announcements!
Ooh.
PopCap, who's a lot of fun, announced... I love how they announced this, by the way, on April Fool's Day, but they've started a new experimental game label called Fourth and Battery, which happens to be the address for their studios, I guess. And, you know, one of the things that they've discovered is that even in their company, the development resources it takes to build a game has gotten large enough that they can't be, you know, quick enough to do some of these crazy... Like, they have all these crazy ideas, but if they work them up into a full game, that starts to require a lot of resources. So they wanted to start doing, hey, we got this crazy idea, let's just do something fun and quick. And the first of these is Unpleasant Horse. Unpleasant Horse is a iPhone game. Have you seen it? It's awesome.
No, I haven't.
You should watch the demo video of it. We have the demo video of it on Shaq too. It's really funny. Unpleasant Horse is a evil Pegasus that jumps around from cloud to cloud and hops on birds and knocks them down because the bottom of the screen is filled with meat grinders.
Wow.
And so Unpleasant Horse bounds around.
It says PopCap's Unpleasant Horse rejected by Apple.
It was rejected yesterday by Apple for mature content.
It's too unpleasant.
It's too unpleasant. So, Jeff Green, get to work on fixing that because I think Unpleasant Horse is hilarious. And Apple, get off your high horse. Hey-o! anyway, so yeah. And the way you lose is if you miss the clouds that you can land on or the birdies, then Unpleasant Horse falls into the meat grinder too.
Aww.
Yeah. You know what you get then, right? Hot dogs.
Oh. Oh. Boom ching.
As you already know, Jeff, and you said you took advantage of.
I did.
BioWare is offering a reward for its very loyal customer base. If you have purchased Dragon Age 2 or purchased Dragon Age 2 prior to April 30th, 2011, then you will be able to get a free downloadable copy of Mass Effect 2. It's pretty simple. All you have
to
do...
On the PC.
On the PC. Yeah, well, I guess you could have downloadable content on it. Yeah, you're right. So this would be for the PC version, right? All you have to do basically is go in to Dragon Age 2, activate your online pass, log in with your EA account, and then go through the social BioWare offer to submit your offer, and then you'll be able to get it back through the EA Download Manager.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what platform you bought Dragon Age 2 on.
Nope.
But you will always get Mass Effect 2 on the PC.
Yes.
Did you hear the other Mass Effect 2 news? How they're doing a feature anime?
I did see that today.
For Mass Effect next summer, TO Entertainment and Funimation Entertainment are going to do it.
Do you like that idea? Those are the same guys who did the Dead Space animation.
I'm not a fan of taking a series that I really love and making it anime, and I think that's probably just because I don't really like anime.
What the hell is wrong with you?
I know. It's too scary. I'm really looking forward to what they're going to do with the feature film adaptation of Mass Effect.
Fail.
What? No, there's potential for it to be amazing. Maybe.
I guarantee you Shepard would kill a fraction of the people he actually killed in that film.
That's probably true.
I like the way that BioWare has handled the world of Mass Effect. Because, I mean, we've talked about this before. The only video game novels I've ever read are Drew Karpashian. I always worry about pronouncing his name right. His novels that he wrote, which goes with the canon for the game. And one of the things that's very interesting, though, and as a matter of fact, there's a new one of those out. There's a third one out that just came out a few weeks ago, if you're into the Mass Effect world, that would also support the world. And one of the things that's very cool that they do is that they're always talking about things that are peripheral, and you can see the tendrils and how they tie in, but they never spoil the Shepard story. Mm-hmm. They never get into they never get in too close to the Shepard story, but they're always close enough that it's interesting and relevant and building out the story. And I think that that's a really, really interesting, tough line to walk. I mean, it's really hard to do that. It's really, I mean, like, one thing, you've got like this Bible of information. So it'd be really easy just like, I'm just going to do a Mass Effect story. And it's going to be like some stuff. Whatever. We don't even know what it's going to be. But like, you know, just like some random story. But that wouldn't be very interesting. But then it would also be, you know, then you don't want to fall into like, oh, we're going to tell the story of Shepard. Or let's tell the story of one of the crew members who's the sister of this mm-hmm. other guy who knows. Like, you don't want to get too close in because then you like, it, you know, you get like that disconnect with like what you happened in your version of the story. I think you should watch it. I think we should make you watch anime.
Okay.
It'll be good. You'll like it.
Okay.
It'll be good.
Have you ever watched any anime?
Yes, I have.
What?
I
don't remember what it was called. I was on at my friend's house.
Well, it could have been bad. It could have been good. What was it about?
I don't remember.
They have giant robots?
Are you against animation as a whole? Or just...
No. I love animation. But I think I just haven't been properly exposed to anime. So how about people leave some suggestions of their favorite animes for
that
me
sounds
to try
good.
Out?
She's going
to
get...
Have you ever seen the classic... Have you seen like Akira? Have you seen Akira?
Maybe.
I don't know if that's a good first one. It's kind of obtuse and odd, but it's good.
I bet she gets tons of Miyazaki recommendations.
Well, yeah. I mean,
can't
I
really go wrong with either, but it's
anime.
Different.
Yeah, you can tweet me, at Andrea Renee. Let me know.
Have you seen, this isn't technically anime, but it's heavily anime influenced. Have you seen Avatar The Last Airbender?
Yes, I have.
It's amazing.
I watched that almost that whole series, and that was like the closest I got to anime, and I actually really liked that series.
It's phenomenal. It's
yeah,
great.
It was really good.
Do not judge it by the film.
I haven't seen the film yet.
I think Evangelion.
Okay.
Let's just throw her in the deep end. Let's do Evangelion.
Full Metal Alchemist.
It's not bad, too. Not bad too. All right, your suggestions. Now you know where to send them. And then last but not least, that game that I gave an 85, not a 90. An 85.
Wait a minute, you guys didn't give those kinds of numbers?
I don't remember. Like, I think it's like the Metacritic conversion. Anyway, that would be Prey. Prey is getting a sequel and...
Sweet! You know what I liked most about that game? The portals, the gravity. Such a clever game mechanic. I'm excited about the sequel.
So Chris Reinhardt, who is the creative director at Human Head Studios, and is a really cool guy. I really, like, back in the day, I wrote a very extensive Prey piece at 1UP. It was one of our cover stories. Got to meet know those guys, not know them, got to meet and talk to them in great depth. I just don't know what they're thinking here. They've taken Portals and Gravity out of the game.
What the what?
Yeah. You read the story.
I did. So
here's his quote. And
then I don't understand what's left.
Portals?
Native American protagonist? That's
no,
what's left.
It's actually a different guy who's the protagonist.
So what the hell?
Portals and Gravity were the functions of the Sphere, which was the mothership in the original game, and the Sphere is gone. We explored a lot of ways that you could use Portals and Gravities in combat, and I really wanted to shift away from making it too much of a puzzle game.
Oh. That's what's so cool about it.
Well, I don't know that that's what's so cool about it, but it certainly was one of its signature elements that made it not every other game
out
there.
It was the only signature element. What other signature elements were there? Native American protagonist.
Spirit walking.
When do you have that spirit guide, dude.
There were tons.
Oh yeah, you have to walk like there's a locked door, so you spirit walk through it and then unlock.
Well, and
it on
you had the
side.
Spirit bow that would like let you fight yourself out of death. Remember, you like shoot the souls.
Yeah, that was cool. Kind of.
Whatever. You've clearly never taken peyote. It was that's very true. Cool.
Yeah, that's just really a disappointment. And I want games to go more toward being puzzle games, like more Portal, more. You know, more of
I wonder
that
if
stuff,
whether
less
whether it was
bland
a
shooter.
Conscious admission or, you know, just was like in the back of their subconscious. If it's a like, wow, you know, I'm glad we got Prey out before Portal and Portal 2 because now we're fucked.
Isn't it better to be first
because
at something than
because
to be the
they
best
got,
at
they
it?
Got, yeah, I'm saying they got Prey out before Portal, right?
Yeah.
But now that Portal is out and Portal 2 is out here in the next 2 weeks, do they really want to try and do Prey 2 if they can't do Portals at least that good or better?
I think you go and you own that space for yourself. Yeah, you know, it doesn't have to compete with Portal on a Portal level, but it's
damn
got
well better implement.
It's got its own way of doing that. That's different than what Portal does. You know,
well, let me tell you, from having researched and written about that, there's a like making portals in levels and using portals the way that you want to is really, 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 really complicated.
I don't doubt that.
Some of the very smartest people tried to make Prey work for a very, very long time. I mean, like super programmers like Corinne Yu and it's like still like eluded those folks for a long time. I think Corinne was the one who probably got the closest, and she's up at Microsoft now, so who knows what they'll do up there. But anyway, I think that it could be just a simple matter of, yeah, we did what we could do with what we have figured out for it, but to do all those things that were originally hinted at of like...
So then why do a sequel to that? Why resurrect that IP?
I don't know.
For what?
I agree. I actually do kind of agree with that. I mean, it's Prey. Prey was Portals. You got to do Portals. Huh. But we have Portals. We got Portal 2. And I can't wait to play Portal 2.
I can't wait either.
I can't wait to play that game tape. There you go, folks. That's the big show.
Are you going to play that
for
game co-op
today?
Are you going to play it solo?
I'm going to play it co-op.
Yeah, okay.
Of course.
All right.
If we're on at the same time, I'll play with you.
Yeah, let's do it.
I think it'd be fun.
I would love that.
All right, folks, it's time for Finishing Moves.
It's the weekend, and it's time for Finishing Moves.
All right, Andrea, you get to start us off.
Oh, I was hoping I was going to get to go last.
No, I get to go last. It's my goddamn show.
Oh, well, geez. All right, then. So my finishing move... Try to envision a world where female characters are more than just tits and ass.
Is that it?
That's
it. Is there more to that world? I want to flesh out this world. No pun intended.
Hey. You just couldn't resist. You couldn't even go. Couldn't even like dignify or like, you know, like I'd go right there.
I just want to know what the world is like.
In a world where female leads are more than tits and ass. One man stands tall.
Yeah. There's no girls in the game at all. But like, they're more than tits and ass to him. They're just off camera constantly.
Wow. Backfire of all backfires.
Every scene, it's about a bunch of dude bros that shoot things, but every scene starts
like
with...
Like Brink, you mean?
Yeah. Every scene starts with them going, I like Brink.
I do too, and I gave Richard Hamm a hell of a time for not having one goddamn female in that game.
I want to finish my fucking joke.
Go ahead.
Every scene starts with them going, I just had the most interesting conversation with a very intelligent lady. All right, let's kill some stuff. Let's kill stuff.
They're all off camera.
Yeah, you never see them.
It's like the world's most fascinating man. I like it. Hey, you know what? You've had all the time you get, Jeff. This is it, brother.
My finishing move? I got nothing. I don't know. You know, we didn't really ever talk more about the spoiler thing that I brought up last week. I didn't really ever want to talk about it again because clearly there's no consensus. You know, people responded wonderfully to me on Twitter, also in the forum. So here's my pact to you, the audience, with spoilers. I think things need to be talked about. We will be conscious of, or at least I will be conscious of, not trying to spoil things. And if spoilers come up in the future, I will label them. I thought I labeled that Crisis 2 from 2 weeks ago. I thought I labeled that spoiler well enough, but maybe we'll do a much bigger chunk of that. I do not like the idea of a spoiler section. I think we should label things and tell people we're going to talk about spoilers. But I don't think just talking generalities and things is good enough for me when it calls for specific moments to be explored.
We're trying. I mean, we're actually taking the advice to heart and trying not to be quite as rigid. But I like it. I mean, I want us to get back to telling more stories because the fun of the show is like telling the stories that we've had, you know, playing games.
Yeah.
My story for this week is from Shift 2, where I just learned an incredible insight into the challenges of using what you have at your disposal and recognizing what you're really good at and not feeling like you have to cram the kitchen sink in there. Shift 2 is a really cool game in one way, but it's one that's really getting in its way all of the time. And by that I mean, I don't understand why they felt the necessity to do things like take really, really fast cars and cram them onto really, really small tracks and make them wreck everywhere. It's not fun. And so if you're looking at Shift 2, which we've talked about some, and I don't have other good racing folks to talk about, so I'll just give you this. If you can not be a completionist, and this is tough because the sort of person, I think the sort of person who likes a racing game typically is of that ilk of that, I want to finish the game, I want to get 100%. If you can not be a completionist, there's some great racing to enjoy, and as you get into the higher-end cars, they start to behave a lot more better, a lot more believably. They really suck down on the ground. They're much more fun to control. They don't hop all over the place. But if you're a completionist, there's so many things that'll drive you nuts about Shift 2, and it's a shame. And it's a shame that designers feel like you got to get so much in there, like you got to get all that stuff for the back of the box because they had a great game, and they added a bunch of stuff on top of it that wasn't any good. It's a bummer. Everything, though, is good about Swords and Sorcery. Thanks very much to Craig, who is the artist, animator, and writer on Super Brothers Swords and Sorcery, and he's at the one console, THE number one console, and also Jim Guthrie, who did the composing of the music that you heard, and you can get that EP now on iTunes, and it's also available somewhere else. I thought it was down here for sure, but I guess I really can't find it. Anyway, and it was really funny. I'll include in the show notes the little bit of trivia he included about the infamous GDC Kumar podcast where those guys met up and the genesis for a cool game was born. Mm. I wish we could give birth to more games.
Yeah.
That'd be neat. All right, folks, that's it. Catch up with Jeff on the totallyradshow.com weekly upcoming movie review.
We've got some big stuff next week. I know we're doing the movie we're doing is Hannah, but we've also got a big iOS game roundup that we're coming out with. And then I think on Thursday we're going to be able to talk about a game I know we'll be talking about next week because it's under embargo, Inversion.
So. Yeah, we'll have Jeff back as well.
Yeah.
It'll be really interesting. That's the Upside Down in New York City shooter.
It is indeed.
I heard that it has something that's missing from a game we were just talking about.
Perhaps.
Interesting.
I can't talk about it until next week, so tune in again.
And you can catch up with Andrea on This Week in Video Games.
Actually, I'm no longer working on This Week in Video Games.
Then you can't catch up with her
there. But you can watch me
about Last Week in Video
Games. 4 days a week at Mahalo Video Games. MahaloGaming.com, YouTube.com/MahaloVideoGames. My show, Mahalo Video Games Today.
Mahalo.
Mahalo.
What does mahalo mean?
It means thank you.
Oh.
That's, I don't know. What is hello in Hawaiian?
Aloha.
Aloha. Aloha. Duh.
Yeah.
We should make aloha mahalo. Mind broke. Oh my gosh. Let's get the hell out of here and go have a beer. Thanks, everybody. That's your weekend confirmed. Until next week, we are Ghost.
The new me can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. Can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. Can't stop my shine.
Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by Game Center, the must-have app for gamers. Game Center is filled with game information, the latest gaming news from ShackNews.com, and videos and screenshots for over 7,000 games. Game Center is free and available now for the iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.